PM. Sound like Greg coming now.
Hello.
First item on our agenda is public comments. I don't know of anybody that's indicated that they want to make a comment or anything at this point, so we will close that point of our meeting. Going on to our scheduled items, approval of the minutes from May 12, 2015, Special Planning Commission meeting. And before I get started on that, I guess Jeff Dodge will be recognized as a voting member tonight. So approval of the minutes for May 12th, our Special Planning Commission meeting. I assume that all of you had the opportunity to read them, and I would entertain a motion to approve these minutes.
I had the opportunity, but I didn't read them.
Let's see, pardon.
So I will not entertain a motion myself.
Let's not be bashful, let's hear a motion.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Nay.
Abstain.
It passes. Second item on our agenda is conceptual plan to subdivide Fred Levine's property located at 3939 West 400 North in the PR 22 Pine Residential District.
Yes. Met with Mr. Fred Levine, his wife, a number of times to discuss subdividing their lot. Their lot currently, as it stands, is 1.1 acres, whereabouts. Both people parcels together. It's about 1.1 acres. And the PR, and this is located in, like Commissioner Dodge said, in PR 2.2 zone, meaning that the 2.2 is the density per acre, 2.2 units per acre. So he's right there where he has the density to subdivide his lot. Just want to go over a couple issues as staff has reviewed this proposal. Just want to go over a couple things that want the Planning Commission to be aware of. First of all, the sewer. There is a sewer manhole. If you look at the concept plan that's drawn up by Mr. Levine, there's a sewer manhole on the southwest side of the property, the southwest corner. That connects onto Landon Court, if you're familiar with that area. It's a cul-de-sac to the west. There would need to be a sewer easement on the south side of this property in order to continue that sewer access onto neighboring properties in the event that they also subdivide. So we just want to make sure that we allowing others the same opportunity that Mr. Levine's having to subdivide his property.
What's north?
Sorry. North, the house faces north. The
is
bottom of the paper is north.
Okay.
Is the property to the south and west of that sewer, are those parcels subdividable?
The property to the south and the west? South and the west, that's Landon Court.
Right, You said
yeah.
That the sewer access needs to be maintained
access,
so that the others can subdivide.
Yeah, the sewer access is for the people on the south, and then as you continue on to the east, sorry. So those ones would need to be able to connect on the sewer.
To the east, you mean?
Yeah,
yeah,
to the east.
Okay.
Yeah, so those ones would need to be able to. So there would need to be a sewer easement place, which falls within the setbacks. So there's a 30-foot setback or 25-foot setback on the rear property. The house would be built on this back parcel. So we just need to make sure that there's a public utility easement indicating a future sewer line through there. And then also...
Is there an ARE easement there today?
There may not be, because this house was built in the 60s. It was built with county land.
So we're talking about creating an easement, not keeping one intact. Right?
My guess is creating one. We could also be creating an easement on the west side of the property. Over here, and that's so that Mr. Levine could also access the sewer line as well, because you would need to connect your home to a sewer line.
Okay.
So that's one concern that we have. We need to make sure that the buildable area of the lot allows for the main floor to have 1,200 square feet. Or 1,400 square feet, So, well, I'll just have to go through the code with you on how to situate that building so that you have enough living space. So let's make sure that the building meets the code requirement for PR 2.2 zone as far as size. And then one thing I noticed in this area of the 2.2 zone was that although the 2.2 equates to about 0.45 acres per lot, most of the houses, a lot of the houses that are in the 2.2 zone are only about 0.3. So I did some research on why that was. I believe that they were developed under the code allowing for flexible subdivision projects, which would, it's kind of like clustering where you, if you want to read the code, it's 10-6C, but what it does is it reduces the amount of buildable area from the 0.45 acres, or the, what's nearly 19,000 square feet, and reduces it to about 12,000 square feet, or about a third of an acre, so about 30 acre lots. And that's to, there's some reasoning given in the code, but they essentially come down to providing utilities to residents at a cheaper cost to the city. So you're not running lines in longer directions. And then finally, this has kind of been a big issue in discussions with Mr. Levine, is the public improvements that would need to be made in order for him to develop lots. Anytime the city does a subdivision, the developer is required to put in public improvements. These include sewer lines, any public utility, streets, and then curb gutter sidewalk. In the case here, the utilities, the actual lines are already in the street. However, the street there, if you've driven on the street, if you're familiar with where it is, it's as you drive past Deerfield going east and continue on through the four-way stop sign there and head up to Canyon Road. This is a house that's on the right, and it's at the juncture where it kind of, it's like an hourglass, and it kind of funnels into a narrow road. The ultimate goal of the city for that road is that it become a wider road, and that it currently is a heavily trafficked road because of the parents going in and out there from Canyon Heights going to Deerfield and the tree to them. But we want to make that road a safer road, so we want to have that street dedication be made. Because if you look at the property lines, the pins are in the asphalt. They're out in the asphalt. So we want to make sure that we continue to widen that road as the city gets that opportunity. Now, the tricky thing there is that this is kind of, we talked about this last time, the border between Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove is a little bit like Swiss cheese. And this is right on the edge of one of the holes of cheese. So his neighboring property is Pleasant Grove, and across the street is Pleasant Grove.
Which neighbor?
Neighbor to the east and neighbor to the north.
The road itself is Pleasant Grove, isn't it?
No, that's Beverly Heights. That's in Cedar Hills.
That's a Cedar Hills road?
That's a Cedar Hills road, I don't know. That's the subdivision. I'm thinking of the map, right? That's the subdivision, Beverly Heights, and that's in Cedar Hills.
No, the road that Brother Levine's house is on is a Pleasant Grove road, isn't it?
That is a...
It's not a Cedar Hills road.
Yeah, it is a Pleasant Grove road, yeah.
Right.
Road is.
So we have a wish and desire to do that, but we have no control to actually do that. Right? I mean, it's a Pleasant Grove road.
Well, the front edge is Cedar Hills at that point.
Right. But the road is a Pleasant Grove road.
Portions of it.
Okay.
How's that?
Well, whatever it is, we don't have the power, we don't have the ability to actually widen that road.
We don't have the ability to construct that road as wide as we'd like it to be right now.
Right.
But where we get the opportunity to put in one piece of it that widens it, we want to do that. That's the issue here. However, you can see his map. He's illustrated where his driveway is, where he's got a hedge. And if you drive through there, it's a big tree. There's a lot going on where the sidewalk would need to go through. And I'm going to let, if you want to talk about that for a minute. Okay.
Doug, come over here.
Take a seat. Sorry about the mic.
Oh, he's getting set. I'd like to ask a question.
Sure.
About where the public road is on my drawing.
Public road is
right
on the bottom of the page.
It's always wrong, right?
Okay.
I'm sure it's not that.
It's going straight up.
This one's going to do it for me.
There.
North or south. And the road goes.
In my mind, I see. So she drives up that road that's right here. It's on the right hand side.
There's no road on either, any of these other sides.
Lots there.
This is just property lines.
Yep.
Here's Canyon Road.
This is the road in the town.
Oh, yeah.
There's the church down there, so this is the road right here. Can you see I got that driveway that's on this drawing?
Oh, yeah.
The thing is heavily trafficked because it is, it's very dangerous.
I take it most days. Yep, it is.
Especially if you pass somebody, it's, you know, on the shoulder.
I don't drive it a whole lot when I go to vote at Deerfield, but, you know, you take a right and suddenly you got to kind of slow way down because there are people coming toward you and you're on a narrow, and like you said, overcome.
It's narrower than ours.
It's
not saying something.
There is, and it's not very well maintained. There's a number of issues.
I thought it was a private road.
It's not a private road.
There's no lines.
There's no lines. I think Pleasant Grove kind of thinks of it as a country lane.
Yeah.
So it says they have the sidewalks, but they have the infrastructure as you'd like to see on it. But if you look at it, if you look at any east-west corridor of the city, we have basically two. We have Cedar Hills Drive that takes you from Canyon Road all the way down to 4800 West. And eventually the idea is that this road, in a perfect world, would take you from Canyon Road all the way to 4800 West, but south of much more south of Lone Peak High School. But
two lanes wide, or three, or five?
Two lanes wide. Five.
No, it's all undeveloped up there. They're all the same.
Ideally, we'd want to probably have it be a 60-foot cross section from sidewalk.
That's what I
and a sidewalk to end a sidewalk. So you'd have 4 feet of sidewalk on both sides, and then
a curb and gutter, and
curb and gutter, then a road, which would be
sidewalk on both sides. You said,
yeah. If I'm thinking of it right, I have to look at the design standards, but there is a plan there. So, but I'll let Mr. Levine address his concerns there.
Well, first of all, I'd like to give you a little bit of history. We have been here in Cedar Hills for 45 years. Cedar Hills was not here. We started the whole thing. And been here, and, you know, all my kids were in Pleasant Grove and so forth. But we decided to go to Cedar Hills. Well, we live on one, like you told me, we lived on 1 acre. And now that we are getting of age and decided that we don't need that third of an acre back there for our animals that we used to have, we want to build a house. But I'm also aware of it that I have to go by code. And so for what you see here, I have this is not professionally done, but
that's why it's not noise.
It's a professional.
But all these lines in my eyes are all crooked because I can't see on this eye, and this one is doing the same thing that that left eye is doing. So if I can't read it as well, I have 32 shots in my eyes, so we can see why. While it's written something here in pretty big letters. The problem I have is this. First of all, I'm the last house in Cedar Hills. My irrigation, or our, I should say, it's my wife's too. The irrigation ditch is the property line for Cedar Hills. Like it was mentioned, east of me, there's two houses that have built houses in the back of, just like I did, what I want to do. And they're in Pleasant Grove. Pleasant Grove has told me that they will never have anything else but a country lane there. I talked to several people from Pleasant Grove that are in the city public, whatever they are. I talked to a few people. Yeah, they come. They will never do anything. So in my view, if I have to build a sidewalk, this is what I have to do. Remove 6 trees. remove irrigation pipes and box, build a retaining wall, rebuild the street. Now that I wasn't too sure of, because if I build a sidewalk, does Cedar Hills build a street? Because I own 21 from the current sidewalk, I own 21 feet towards the road. It's about a foot of the asphalt. The other side of that foot is Pleasant Grove. Relocate culinary water hookup. Relocate secondary water hookup. Remove 100 feet of shrubs that was planted 30 years ago. This huge Fitzers. He took pictures today for
the pictures.
I mean, they've been there and they're very, it's a nice wall. I never had to build a fence. I did this. Sidewalk is 21 feet into my property. From property line, that means from the one foot of asphalt street that belongs to Pleasant Grove, 21 feet from that point, that would be the sidewalk. Pleasant Grove Lane. This will always be a country lane. This is what I understand. So I cannot see having all this expense to build one house back there, because if you build a house, and the reason you're building a house and the reason we are building a house is because we can't live on Social Security. And so all the expense of this will go on at least a house, and it's not worth it for me to build. I just cannot see. And I know that's the zoning, that you have to do this. But I'm asking for an exception, because it's the last house. If you go one more lot, does it matter? One more? If Pleasant Grove was going to build a lot there, and everybody, we would all have to do it. The two neighbors east of me, when they built their house, or I should say their children built their house back there, they didn't have to build a sidewalk. So that's what I'm asking, that we can eliminate.
There's a lock that was subdivided
down there. I forgot. It's on top here, I had remove two telephone poles. Those are telephone lines, and they can't be there if we have to do just the street or even just the sidewalk. So my question is this: if you allow this for me to do it, that'd be wonderful. You will have the Cedar Hills will collect taxes for my house back there. If this doesn't happen, I don't know what I do. I probably won't build. I'm not sure. But I cannot see it. Common sense would tell me, you know, why.
So this is a requirement of our zoning. Yeah. For all these permits to be made in the street. Is it because he's building a second home?
No, it's anytime you split a lot, it's considered a subdivision, so you go to the subdivision regulations.
So you should not forget anything
you're really talking about.
I think you read all your list. if you want, you can hand that to Courtney if you want that list or not.
Maybe you haven't got it all.
So this is under section 11.5.2. Streets and design requirements for subdivision. It says sidewalks of not less than 4 feet in width shall be constructed adjacent to all streets provided on minor streets that provide access to lots on one side only. The city may waive the requirements for the construction of sidewalk on the non-access side. The only real time we've ever said no sidewalk is required is private drive. So if you go down Cane Road, Mountaintop Trails, the cul-de-sac subdivision there, That's considered, cul-de-sac is considered a private drive. So on private drives, you don't need a sidewalk. However, 4,000 North here is not a private drive. So it's adjacent to a public street.
Excuse me, why do you say 4,000 North because it's 9,600 North, is it?
Depends what city you're in.
Yeah, you say, depends what city you're in.
What city address you want to use?
We use 9600 North because that's Cedar Hill's address.
Is it 9600 yeah. North?
Uh-huh. All my neighbors around me next to it use 4000 North or Sven Monson Lane.
Yeah.
Thing. Mm-hmm. It has three names.
Yeah, you're right. in staff, we always just refer to that road as 4000 North. Oh, okay. So.
Oh, you do it from Cedar Hill's? You don't say 9600 North?
It's both. This is confusing.
Okay.
Because most usually when we're talking about it, we're referring to the Pleasant Grove portion, so we're referring to the 4,000 North.
Not just want to make sure where I live.
We're talking about, yeah.
Can I say a few words?
Yeah.
So a full disclosure, Fred approached me outside of this meeting because we're somewhat neighboring a little block away, so I have a little more background on this than what you're just hearing. Full disclosure. So I live, I guess, a block and a half away from Fred.
To which direction?
To the south. And I'm going to be a little candid on the history of the street here, just because I think it's important we understand. So it's a country lane by choice. There are some residents on that street that prefer it that way. And when Mr. Levine says, forever. I think that's mostly in regards to the city council person, Cindy Boyd, who lives on that very street, is opposed to it being widened, and that's one major reason why it's never been widened or considered widened by the city of Pleasant Grove, because she's been there many years, and she's opposed to that because she lives on the street. Other residents, and I will say that I'm not right here, but other residents on that street, if you drive down that road, you'll notice that you got to watch your paint on your car because they let all their branches grow very long. They basically are attempting to discourage the use of that road, and the unsafe conditions are caused in part by the residents who live there, but Fred's not one of them. I'll show you some pictures. Before we came to the meeting today, I went by and took some pictures because I thought it would be visually might be useful. The public safety aspect of it, I get it. I mean, I drive that road all the time. I walk there sometimes. My kids go up and down that road walking. It is a safety concern. My concern is that attempting to resolve the safety concerns that exist there and putting the entire burden for extending or improving the safety by how many feet it is, how long your property is there.
150
feet. So improving the road by 150 feet of safety requires, Mr. Levine to put a sidewalk in. I'm just wondering if that sidewalk, in my mind, could come if and when the road is improved. In other words, we require Fred to put a sidewalk in, but it's requirement is met when the road is actually improved and widened by the city of Pleasant Grove. That's just one option. I've seen that where in past cases where a lot of them be subdivided, but the sidewalk doesn't have to go in right away, right? It goes in when the actual property is actually developed. Now, Mr. Lee might develop right away, but in my mind, the safety improvements, I'm not quite certain actually are going to make things safer. If you look at this picture and pass around, there's a little bit of an elevation drop between where the sidewalk would have to go in his property, and I guess he could build a retaining railing that could add to your list, I guess, to put a rail in. But if you put a sidewalk there, you got to put a rail or a safety fence of some sort, because there's going to be a drop-off between the sidewalk and his home. I don't know how many feet, maybe 3-4 feet, I don't know.
3 feet, yeah.
So I'm not quite sure you really improve the safety that much unless you add another requirement to the list, and that is put in a railing fence of some sort. So in my mind, I want Mr. Levine to meet the requirements, but I also think that maybe the city is putting the burden of safety completely on Mr. Levine just to improve 150 feet of road. I think sometimes government needs to be benevolent in some cases. I think this body shouldn't always, never, ever make an exception, as long as public safety is not impacted. So I know we're supposed to go by the code, and I essentially am saying we should go by the code, but I'm just saying that maybe we should require this to be done when the road's actually approved and the actual safety can go in. So that's my two cents on the matter.
Can I add to that? Mm-hmm. Just some information that might be helpful. Those are two things that I've thought of when discussing this with Mr. Levine. I've been out to his property with him and walked it and looked at it and don't know very well. So on requiring a public safety or requiring public improvements when the road is to be done, that was one thing that I had talked with him about. The city's done similar things like that in the past, where there's a home on Canyon Road that wanted to subdivide, and they did. The city didn't require a sidewalk there because there's no sidewalk adjacent either side of the property. However, that individual posted a bond that when that sidewalk is in, then they don't put it in. So if there would need to be some sort of public safety bond or guarantee that those improvements get made. However, the real problem with that is that bonds expire. So it also has to be an agreement of some sort. And that's a little bit beyond my pay grade. We need to have our legal team look at that as far as the legality of holding a bond for longer than we can or should. So that's that. It's something we have discussed. And then as far as like, increasing the safety, you're right. The portion that is in front of Mr. Levine's house is not the dangerous part of the road. However, the idea is that if you improve piece by piece, in the end, it will all be open. And it's a long process. It's not a short process, especially dealing with some of the old blood in the area. It's not going to be something that's worked out for the next year or two, right, or a decade, who knows.
Question, to the immediate west, are we showing sidewalk here?
Yeah.
So the lot to your immediate west?
Immediate west is sidewalk, yes.
There's a sidewalk there, and when the sidewalk hits his property, there's kind of a storm drain issue there. So, there's a sidewalk there. Now, one of the thoughts I had was it's not within this body's ability to grant exceptions to the code, be quite frank. This body evaluates proposals in relationship to the code and says this meets code, this does not meet code, and here's why, and here's what you need to do.
Can we make recommendations to the city council? To
well, I don't believe it would go to the city council next. No, I think it would go to the board of adjustments.
The
board of adjustment would then hear it and say, looking at his list, saying, you know, there's an undue burden here on the applicant in order to develop his lot, so we would grant them the variance. And at that point, we'd come back and reconvene with this body.
That's a slippery slope.
That's a slippery slope, too.
And as much as we're dealing with some other issues that could become a little cloudy with that.
Yeah, you don't like to start
any owner
exceptions to the rules, because those seem to be the ones that everyone knows about and everyone points to. So.
Any owner has property rights, that's correct.
They do.
All owners have property rights,
absolutely.
Not just...
Absolutely, and I've never.
Not just me.
I've always known that this is a lot that is subdivisible. That is true. This is how we go about it. We need to make sure that we're not setting ourselves up for problems in the future.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? I mean, a lot of these things on the list, I think, fall into a couple of different categories in my mind. Some of them are kind of it's a shame. Like the trees and the shrubs, I mean, you know, if they're mature trees and mature shrubs, like that to me is a shame that we have to take them out. then there are other things that are a financial burden, I think, to improve.
But you get something back for that, too.
True, yeah.
You know, you get another lot.
Have you gotten any bids for how much this would cost you?
No, okay. Not all. I mean, I just use my head and say, hey, there's a lot of expense there. Just moving the telephone. I don't know if the telephone company says, okay, Fred, we just move it. We move it fine, but you pay
sometimes.
For it.
Yeah, that's what'll
happen. Right?
Yeah. I would be interested to see if it.
It would be helpful from my perspective to understand
through here, or do they drop
this would all cost.
What we have right here is we've got a lot of trees and bushes and a sidewalk right now that is not causing us any problems. If we require Mr. Levine to make all these changes he has said, then I won't be able to do it, and we still have the same problem.
Well, I'd like to remind the commission, if they are intimately aware of this, that there is an opinion about the planning commission that a lot of these things we just stamp them off and send them off. Well, that's not necessarily true. It's a perception that exists with the planning commission. And being a member of the planning commission for almost in perpetuity, this is my 11th year, I feel sensitive about that. Now, the way out, and I haven't heard Mr. Levine make a proposal for what he might do. He has listed what he'd have to do. But I think the way to deal with this is to make our opinion based on what we have, and that's the ordinances. That's our job. That's why we're called. That's why there's a planning commission, is to judge these projects on the basis of the ordinance and then send it to the Board of Adjustments, where they have the flexibility to do something with that. I have a number of questions that I've jotted down. I don't know how you want to proceed, Mr. Chairman. We could just defer to, I wouldn't want to do that, but I do have some questions when it comes to time to be appropriate.
That was as good as any time.
Well, all right. At the risk of being a good gorilla in a pet store, I agree with Mr. Levine that there's going to be a big problem of improving that road. I drove it the other day looking at the estimating by eye where the property lines, the easement would go. And in a lot of cases, it's awfully close to front porches. It doesn't look to me like there's ever going to be enough room to have a wider road and the setbacks that most cities, including Pleasant Grove, require. Not to mention the politics that exist over improving that. On the other hand, I'm an advocate of making improvements when we can. Adding a curb and gutter will benefit the community because it controls and channels that water that comes down that road. And I suspect you know that sometimes it probably comes up towards your door.
Hasn't yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Boy, if you lived in Houston, what a problem. The other thing that another question that I have is this is, are you on a sewer or a septic tank?
I'm still on septic tank.
Yeah, okay. That's an issue for the city independent. Is there there is a sewer in that street?
Yeah.
Is it our sewer or?
As part of subdividing in code, there is a requirement that all homes be connected to a near sewer line.
Yeah, which so I feel strongly about.
That would be the case, and I might have discussed that with Mr. Green. So.
You ought to put that on your list because that's not very expensive.
I do have an option to go up to the north of my house in the septic tank.
Sewer line.
Sewer line.
You can hook onto the sewer line.
I can hook onto the sewer line, Yes, the law says if you have problems, then that's what you have to do. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have any problems.
But you'd have to do that part of the way.
Yeah, I mean, that would be part of
That would be part of the agreement.
Going to the sewer in the north, you'd have to eject it off that, though.
No, it's deep enough for my house. My house is down, and the street is here. And I think I have enough
drain,
drainage to go without putting a pump in there. But I can also go towards the back.
I'm going to the southwest of the easier way.
Probably.
It's a bit longer.
But I just wanted to tell you
that. The gravity flows out.
Yeah.
So is that our city sewer on the southwest?
Well, both of them are
city sewers. Yeah.
So both on the street up 400 north or south or east or whatever. There's our sewer along there. And then, so he has two places.
So there's two options. Yeah.
When they
I think we need to consider that as we discuss this, the hookup to the sewer. I wasn't fully paying attention when you told us about the how that would be subdivided and what would be left of the original lot and what the new lot would be.
It creates a flag lot. Sorry, you need to look past my notes. But
I'll get to that later.
This is all one lot. So it creates the lot here where there's the pole. We just need to make sure it meets our. So it has a 20 foot. This would be a 20 foot.
There's also the sight line size. The sight line is going to get down to this street.
Yeah, so we just need to make sure that the dimensions here meet the minimum requirements for the zone.
So that is a driveway then.
This would be the driveway right here.
But that will belong to the flag.
This would be part of the flag.
So where is his driveway?
I mean,
his driveway comes in off of the street right
over
here.
There. Okay.
Oh, he didn't finish drawing that. I thought it was going to be a little awkward to.
It comes in right here, right?
It shows.
Because this is the garage right here.
Yeah.
So his driveway comes in.
Driveway comes in and goes.
Yeah. And it drops down. Right.
There we go.
It's
okay,
clear in the picture. Okay. Yeah. How wide is the flag?
The flag?
The minimum.
The driveway.
The drive. The pole portion is minimum 20 feet. That's actually what he's got on. That's the easement.
Okay. Today we had a house burned down in Sandy. It was on the news. It was near where my son was, so I was sort of aware of it and concerned about it. It burned down because the fire engines couldn't access the house on the roads that were there. Now, have you talked to our fire marshal to see if they can handle that turn and the whip? And how are they going to turn around and get back out? And what if it's an ambulance, which concerns me in my area? Can I get an ambulance up there? You may be concerned about that as well.
There's a 20-foot wide drive they can get in.
But it goes right up into the lodge.
The road is actually
20 feet setback.
At this,
30
this
feet.
Point, the road is still fairly wide. On
if they come up from the bottom.
Here's a picture looking down at the flag lot. If you were interested, I imagine those trailers would go away, and that's looking into the flag.
Is this the driveway looking down
into the flag?
Through the driveway,
like
to the front of the street, yeah.
Under the new flag drive.
Well, I'm concerned about the emergency equipment accessibility. I don't like flag glasses, and I'll put that in the minutes if you like. I've been consistent in that over the years. Generally, my major concern is accessibility to the property in the back. This piece of property that burned down tonight was behind, it set the house on fire in front of it.
I saw the smoke.
And they couldn't get into it. They did save the lady because of a good Samaritan. So public safety is an issue for me, and I can't read my own writing. If anything is ever done to that road, I'm quite likely it will be a special improvement district. And those things are really hard to set up. So in that regard, I have to concur with the applicant that it's going to be a hard sell. While all of us that use it believe it ought to be updated, but it's still going to be a hard sell with the folks who live along that street. And the pointless of it.
With this SIBO, I don't believe it would, just because the public improvements are already in the road, and the road itself would be widened, and that would be the issue.
But it takes out all those gorgeous trees that I find very dramatic.
The entire community to have that road widened. I know a lot of parents and kids at Deerfield really appreciate that. So
I think public safety is and welfare is a major concern here. I still am skeptical.
If I may,
you have to go in SID. Because that means they have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Not they, but they that live on the street.
That house that we could build something where this is straight, 20 feet is there, but when you come down here, we could make a circle around it so that somebody like the ambulance service could turn and go. There's enough room here. I have 150 feet. And so the sites, not only what?
The site setbacks, you're showing 12 feet, but it's 10 feet.
Yeah.
So you've got plenty of space.
So the house can be moved over.
The house can be moved over. I just put it there because of this. But it could be a better situation, which I like.
If there's a turnaround there that fire
engine can go in there.
The back of one of those big ladder trucks out of there they're good, and they could do it.
Yeah.
But certainly not desirable.
That problem we can solve. My main issue is the sidewalk. I just can't see
one more
house, for all that expense.
When I view that, I see that there are some positive benefits to you to do that, and there are negative benefits. Do they play off against each other? Where's the balance? Does it make sense in establishing policy? Those kind of issues. That's what the commission has to decide on. Those are my comments.
So Chandler, so you make formal application with this kind of proposal and come before us, we actually have to make a recommendation. Let's say the recommendation is no, we recommend that it not be done. What's his recourse at that point, if any?
If there's no recommendation from this body, recourse.
Not a no recommendation, but a negative recommendation.
Negative, like we do not.
I understand.
That's
the equivalent of a denial on a zoning appeal or a zoning
issue.
Then
they go through an appeal process.
And then they go through the appeal process.
To the Board of Adjustments.
Which gets you to the Board of Adjustments.
And if we say yay, then it happens.
Still goes to the Board of Adjustments.
Still goes to the Board of Adjustments. So it goes there right away, right?
But what then would
a negative recommendation be? Are we really just interpreting?
I don't know that you need to make. Here's the problem, and I'm looking at the agenda, and there's no vote tonight. I'm sure where I start. So, if there's a negative there's no recommendation that is the same as a negative recommendation. There's no recommendation. Like I said before, the Planning Commission can't overlook code. It's our job to make sure that the proposals meet the code. And if they don't, we try to bring them into compliance as best as we can. And then that's when the recommendation is made to the City Council. When it doesn't meet code, that's when Mr. Brookfield. They hear and decide variances to the requirements of the zoning ordinance subject to the following: any person or entity desiring a waiver or modification of the requirements of the zoning ordinance as applied to a parcel of property that he owns, leases, or in which he holds some other beneficial interest may apply to the Board of Adjustments for variance from the terms of the zoning ordinance. So that's what he's applying for, is a variance from the term.
So if the Board of Adjustments gives a variance,
If the board is just and gives him, grants him the variance, and there's certain requirements that need to be met in order to be granted the variance, those aren't arbitrary to the city, those are mandated by the state. But if the board of adjustment were to grant that variance, then he comes back to this body with the variance saying, board of adjustment has granted the variance to look past the sidewalk issue and we're going to move on. You know, and then at that point, really, this body disregards the sidewalk code. If that makes sense.
Or the septic tank code.
I don't believe the septic tank one can be. Just because that's a state code. That's a state code that's.
It says only if there's a problem, but they have to hook up.
No, it says if it's subdivided, it has to be hooked up.
Subdivided. Yes.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Or if he has a problem now, he can't bring in a new septic, right?
Yes, that's not Cedar Hills. That's Utah County and that's the state. They're not approving new septic systems.
So explain the bond process. I know and the second option was some type of negotiation.
The bond process goes as follows: when we have an approved subdivision, they get an estimate of all the public improvements on the property. So for instance, we've just been working with AmSource on them posting their bond. Went through their property, they have the square feet of asphalt, they have the linear feet of the concrete in the project, that's curb, gutter, and sidewalk. They have the landscaping, they have the lighting, and they get an estimate for what the cost is, all that. And they hold it in bond in some sort of financial institution, could be any institution. And we just need proof of that bond. However, that bond expires after a year. And if after that year, the improvements haven't been made, the city goes and takes that bond and then makes those public improvements. That's why that year is so critical. And once they're built, all the improvements are built, a building inspector goes out, looks at it and says, okay, these meet our code, these meet our standards, we release the bond, and at that point the project goes into what's called durability. And then for the next year we watch the project to make sure that the infrastructure doesn't deteriorate. If it does, we use the durability bond.
So we don't recommend the bond. That's the city council.
No, it's just all part of the process. It's not
so
really
bond last.
So we would recommend after he has the right to ignore the sidewalk and that, we would recommend to the city council that they approve this, predicated upon a bond being issued for big.
I have to look at it. I don't believe so, because the bonding process is outlined in the code as something that is just a requirement for a subdivision, and that's not really, I've never really heard it being negotiated. Just because it really opens up the city to a lot of liability and exposure when we don't collect that bond. Because if we don't collect the bond and the developer decides not to make the public improvements, the city's on that for it.
So when I was explaining earlier about benevolence, if you will, and code and such, what I was trying to say is there's got to be a creative way in the code to have this met in some manner, but also allows Mr. Levine to exercise his property rights while it's still able. Those are the words he used. While it's still able, I think he said that once to me.
As I said, that's a slippery slope.
No, I don't think anyone's getting away of him. Of you exercising your property rights, it's just that the requirements of the company have a cost associated with that. Trying to find a way to meet halfway, it seems like two things happen here. We've got a walkway that we want to put in, and there's an edge of a street that we want to put in. And right now, what I'm seeing this neighborhood is in the walkway and the street right next to one another. Is that a requirement? Is there a way to sort of walk in now? Without requiring most of this list,
they have to deed the property over to you.
And then improve the street when they do the whole street.
I don't think the topography lends itself to that. Because from the street to the property is actually
a pretty good dip at the driveway. Right?
Yeah, that's why it's like a retaining wall, putting in a retaining wall. So it's not just as simple as putting in a sidewalk.
I was hoping the walkway could do this. We put that in now, and then improve the street at a later date.
It's temporary walk.
Without having to cut down all the trees.
I agree with the slippery slope, by the way, but our city's already been in a slippery slope for many years. years. I mean, we talk about how we're supposed to follow the code, but there's a lot of examples of our city not following the code.
Try to minimize those.
You know, we try to minimize them, right? Just like we're trying to minimize it here again. I mean, I made a motion just a month ago or so to let Beacon Heights keep their deck. It's against code. You know, we proved that. The deck was already there. It was approved by a previous body. It shouldn't have been there in the first place. It was already there. And a moment ago, earlier, Chandler talked about how there's other exceptions in the city where this hasn't happened. But I don't know how. I don't know what the vehicle is to help that happen. And maybe it is that Mr. Lean comes back with his actually submit his proposal for us to make a recommendation. We probably will say no based on what the code says. And he has his day in front of the judge. Maybe you can convince them. I mean, I don't know what your pathway is.
Mayor, I'm still not sure that if you say I have to build a sidewalk, do I also have to build the road? That Pleasant Grove roads?
As I understand it, he would be responsible for the sidewalk, not the road. And there are countless examples where your sidewalk with an unfinished and or grassy space before the road and curb and gutter go on.
That can probably be negotiated. I don't know.
I don't see Pleasant Grove.
That's not my
Pleasant Grove is not going to do the road.
Pleasant Grove is not going to do anything.
No, they're not.
But Cedar Hills only owns technically 8 inches of that little asphalt, I don't know, 1 foot, 12 inches. That's what's Pleasant Grove, because that's my property. That's Cedar Hills.
See that?
After that is Pleasant Grove.
There you go. It's a safety concern to approve the sidewalk, because the road will be unapproved in front of the sidewalk, leading to an unsafe condition.
This other board, what do you call that again?
Board of Adjustment.
Silver tongue.
How long does that take?
They don't have a scheduled meeting. They meet on a periodic basis.
Because I have been here now, this is my fifth month, trying to just get an answer. Folks, I'm going on 80. Okay? I don't want my wife, because I'm going to go first. That's kind of the average thing. We go first and they stay here. I don't want my wife with that kind of problems that we have now. But I have lots of friends that went before me. They're 76 and they're 77. And here I am going close to 80. And I want to get this done and enjoy the fruits of my labor. I have worked hard all my life. And the sidewalk that's the one that will hold up the whole thing here. So I don't know how everybody feels. I have been here 45 years, that it was a lane all the time, except when Cedar Hills came in. The only reason I am in Cedar Hills is because Bob Monson, I don't think none of you know him.
I know.
You know Bob, right? Him and I, we decided, because he had all this acreage, he wanted to have more lots and went to Cedar Hills because they take a third of an acre as a lot. And because of him and I and my son, who had an acre right next door to me, and because of that, other people wanted to do this. We instigated to, and we kind of asked people to, yes, let's go to Cedar Hills. So because of all that, there were probably 100 houses built. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to argue right now. I would be in Pleasant Grove. And so they don't require anything. They didn't do my next door neighbor. I just cannot see it why I have to build a sidewalk. That's my view, okay? I know you have a job to do, but it's going to prolong this whole thing. I thought by this year I would have a foundation in, so that by Christmas I would have a house there. So, folks, you do what you want to do. or what you have to do, but common sense tells me just because you have to doesn't mean we're going to. There can be changes since. I mean, there's rules being made in Pleasant Grove all over the place. This is what my contractor told me. I have a contractor that will build a house and is ready to go. So whatever you can do to help me, be wonderful. I don't know if my wife wants to say anything. Can she say something too?
Oh, yes.
Well, the only thing that I can see is that that sidewalk, that area, is just in front of our lot. It makes no difference whether there's a sidewalk or not, because right next to us, there's no sidewalk all the way up to the road, top of the road. You know, it just ended right, it's just in front of our house right there, and it's so uncomfortable to do this because of the drop of the telephone poles and the irrigation system, and I can see if the sidewalk would be required, that it would, that the wall would practically meet our driveway. And, you know, that doesn't look very fun to me, to see that you have to drive off the street and you can't even get into the driveway. So that little portion that is right there makes no issue on safety. The safety is on the top of the road. It's not right there. So I just honestly, I feel like Fred does. To have a sidewalk there is not going to help with the safety one bit. We're just going to move it up just 150 feet.
Fred, can I ask you a question? From the grade of your driveway down where your garage is to the road, is how high was the elevation change there?
You want the height?
Yeah, like
it's at least 3 to 4 feet. But it raises right there, and then my driveway meets the road. So there has to be a retaining wall coming up, and then it goes like this. Coming from the east below, because the street is going this way. And it gets higher as it goes west. That's the street level.
I just wanted to get a sense for.
Okay. So what does Mr. Levine need to do to make like formal application best for us to consider a different plan than this, or is that adequate?
No, this plan is sufficient. We just didn't get it in time.
Right.
So we can have a discussion on this. We can have an action on this. Next month, and in the meantime, you can have your application in the Board of Adjustment as well, and that can be rescinded based on what this disability decides. And I've got a couple questions I want to answer myself about putting in the sidewalk at a later date, just posting the bond for just the sidewalk. I don't know. I've got some thoughts. I'll talk to you about it. But you could apply to this body and apply at the same time to the Board of Adjustment. And then if this body says yes, we have good news for you, or then we'll find out. We just move on.
Be done today?
It can't be done today because this was submitted just yesterday. So we have to do it next month.
Yeah, it goes another month. But then the Board of Adjustment, another month.
That's not necessarily another month. And this is. There are certain requirements as far as submission goes that we have to follow.
We have to help me with the words.
Public notice.
It's a public notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. The state requires a certain public notice so that people have a chance to respond, including the commissioners.
But the flag lot has been approved. I've been paying taxes for the last 4 years. That's been an
approval.
Well, you can go down to
subdivide
your property every which way you want. It doesn't make you a buildable subdivision.
Okay.
So
okay.
I have to go with my line.
Maybe you'd understand something too, maybe procedurally. In the past, it seems, as long as I've been on this commission, we've essentially been
we've received proposals that have complied with our codes and statutes, and what they're looking for is flexibility within the guidelines. Mm-hmm. And so we've reviewed proposals against the guidelines, which we have some flexibility with, and we've been able to, you know, place conditions on our approval of various proposals. Here, I think, for the first time, I've got a proposal in front of me that doesn't even meet our code. So, per your comments earlier, is this more about us responding to this and making it clear where it does comply with the code and where it doesn't comply with the code, so that he can take that to the Board of Adjustments and get some flexibility that they have that we don't necessarily have? I'm not measuring this against something I think that I have flexibility with.
Yeah.
I'm measuring it against what's been codified by our council.
I would say that's right.
I don't want to create false hope here.
I hate saying that his proposal doesn't meet code, because if we were to not talk about the public improvements tonight and just say, I want to subdivide my lot, here's what the lot lines are going to look like, right? No issues.
Right.
But because I've met with Fred on a number of occasions, and I know that this is an issue, I wanted to bring it up now because it is an issue. So before he goes and pays somebody to, you know, survey his land and really draw up some professional plans, I thought it was fair that this body knew what we were going up against and what the issue here was. Because, I mean, as far as the property lines go, I believe that this can meet code. I think this is fine. It's just a matter of willingness to build this. And I don't think that there's... I think that Mr. Levine has some valid points with regards to the limitations of this property right here. However, I know that this body also has limitations on what they can and can't approve. So as far as the conceptual design, I think this is fine and it all meets code. But before we move on to the preliminary, where you get the drafted set of plans, it costs a lot of money, and you look at those plans and say, hey, you don't have a sidewalk here. That's the issue. I don't want you to go down that road of having to pay those fees when we know full well that that's an issue right now.
I don't know that as a commissioner, I have the flexibility. This isn't a guidelines issue, this is a code issue, and I don't know that I have the flexibility to say, well, let's not require compliance with the code based on these things. It's as though I have to say, here's what our code requires, and that's unpleasant, and so you have to go to the Board of Adjustments to get some variation from that code. I don't know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know that we're in a position where we can say you don't have to comply with these parts of the code. I haven't done that, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I don't think in the last year and a half or whatever that I've been on this commission that we've ever approved something that wasn't compliant, strictly compliant with our code. It's been more flexibility within the guidelines.
Where the planning commission has, there's flexibility in the design guidelines, but there's also areas of the code that grant planning commission flexibility, and that's in the granting of conditional use permits or something like that. So there is some flexibility this body has in the code, but when it comes to design standards, I don't think that they do, and that's an issue. But, you know, when I'm thinking about granting the variance, one of the requirements are, one of the stipulations that need to be met are there conditions on the property that lend itself to granting a variance? You know, is there a building code that needs to be met, that there's a river running through your property that prevents you from meeting that code? And that's something that a variance is granted for. And I'm looking at this thinking, okay, well, if this is a profile, and do I want to have a sidewalk with a 3-foot drop off to the side or a 4-foot drop off to the side? I really don't. You know, so I'm thinking there may be some room for variances here. You know, it might be the best interest of the city to not have a sidewalk there. And I think that's a discussion that the Board of Adjustment needs to have. And I don't know that I don't feel like he needs to necessarily wait for a firm no. I don't think you need to wait for a firm no from this body. I think you can make that application to the Board of Adjustment right now. And we can send it in as soon as we can.
Have concurrent processes going.
I don't see a problem with that. So I don't think that I hate to delay you, but I think that's probably the best way to go.
Are you at the Board of Adjustments?
Am I with the Board of
Adjustments? You make the presentation?
Yeah.
Or will you get together with Brother, Brother Levine? This is Utah.
Yeah, I will.
And point out the areas in which he needs to go to the Board of Adjustments.
Yeah, I can get the application and walk him through that and get that going.
Maybe we can expedite this.
Yeah, I mean, there's they meet on an as-needed basis. So we post it, and then, you know, 10 days later, we have a meeting. So it's all pending their availability.
I realize it's a very unique thing. You never had to do this with others. I know there was a sidewalk issue from Chuck Willis and stuff like this, miscommunication or something. I just want to appreciate what you folks do. I just hope you look at it from my point of view, that the expense would be tremendous. I don't know what to do after that, but I'm sure you, some of you, this gentleman might be retired. I don't know. Live on Social Security is no fun. No. I don't see where Obama gives me in a race next year. I can't see that, so I'm sure I have to live on Social Security, and this is tough.
Now, there's a little irony here. The road to your west, as you go through the forest off on the Deerfield, that was approved a few years back, that used to be a dead end, and then when they rode through about a lot of these, that used to be a dead end street, right? And they opened it up, made it all the way through. The irony there is that I remember Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove met there and had a big ribbon cutting ceremony. How it was a big accomplishment between the two cities. And that road has no sidewalks. So, and that was a chance to put in sidewalks then, and the other city put in a sidewalk west of that four-way stop on the Deerfield. But yet they had a ribbon cutting ceremony and called it a great accomplishment. So a little irony for you in history. Mm-hmm.
So a channel we will get together with Brother
yes.
Mr. Sullivan and work with him to get this set up for the Board of Adjustment. And then we will hear what's happening later on.
So if any of you would be in the Board of Adjustment,
none of us are.
None of you will be there.
We may be in the audience.
But if you were, what would you do?
I would require a later date in some manner by bond or agreement with the city somehow.
I don't know how that bond works. That's another expense, but I mean, what does it cost? If this whole thing would cost $60,000 or $50,000, what does the bond cost? I have no idea.
Depends on the bond, but
depends on the kind. The type of bond has impacts the cost.
You have any idea?
That's it. I don't know. That's a good question for
based on the bond. Total amount of money that we take.
You can call an insurance provider and ask them. I think an improvement bond
or a bank.
And this isn't a very big improvement bond. So
when you mentioned the contractor, you may want to get just a budget figure.
I would expect that the Board of Adjustments is going to ask.
They're
going to
want to know
how much, and if it's just how much you think it's going to cost, it's not going to go very well. You're going to need to say, you know, I contacted 4 trees removed, it's going to be this much per tree, the bushes removed will be this much, retaining wall is this much. They're going to want to see a breakdown.
This thing is, I can't spend any money trying to figure out if I'm going to do it or if I'm not going to do it.
Usually they don't give that quote.
Quotes are free. I've had quite a few quotes made for me. They're free. Yeah.
It's just
constant. It's a pain to call the people, but
well,
they make quotes pretty quickly.
I've been through all that. I've been a contractor myself, so not necessarily general contractor. I was in the glass business. So.
That way we can add a number 11. On the list, or anywhere on that list, we get another number on there that says it will cost me this much money.
Get that.
Yeah.
Okay. I will. We'll give you a call tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
You're welcome. I needed this. I've been waiting for this for a long time.
Okay, well, hopefully you might have to wait too much longer.
I hope not, because you never know what happens. I can go down the street tomorrow, and you won't have to see me again. Only if I'm being viewed, then that's okay. You were so quiet, you didn't say anything.
I'm not supposed to, I'm just here as a liaison.
Oh,
I'm on the city council.
Oh, okay. And then that was probably have to see you.
Wait till you go before the council.
Okay. Probably the last 5 years or so. Or, I mean, it seems like it's been 5 years.
It's been since we moved here.
So if you see strange people walking around your lot, it's us.
We're strange. Yeah. It's been since we
moved here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's well different years.
Willingness to listen to us and consider that and maybe do what you have to do, but maybe also consider us if it is possible. Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you. Right now, move on to our next item on our agenda. It's discussion of the guidelines for design review and plans commercial development. Chandler sent to us online a couple of months ago, it seems to me, some of the changes that we had already made. And I did some reviewing on those myself today. And so, Ken, I'll turn it over to you.
I don't really have a presentation right now. I want this to be more of a discussion, so I don't want to really lead that. I want this to be something that you guys are directing. I've made notes over the last year to discuss this periodically, and I've given a lot of thought about what I feel like I would like to see as far as additions or subtractions from this. One thing that seems to come up that I've been thinking about a lot about lately is the lack of clear-cut definitions in the guidelines. This is something that's kind of driving me nuts. There's frequent mentions of things such as a size scale, densities, ones that's come up. There's a number of them, but there's really no... It's all very ambiguous about what they mean or what they should be. So really the only thing I feel like we have to go off of is what's currently there, what's currently been approved. And I know that makes a lot of people uncomfortable because they say, why should we be held to something that a previous planning commission or the previous city council approved? Why are we held to that standard when we feel it's either greater or smaller? So I know that there's some feelings in that regard. Also, I have some heartburn when I look at our comprehensive list of approved uses. It's not so comprehensive. I think there's a lot of areas there that could be broken down or even wholesale change. So I wanted this discussion. We've kind of gone through, I think, through the first three sections, correct?
Right.
Yes. So I'd like to hear your thoughts. I hope you've had time in the last month or so to go over the design guidelines. I hope you've gone over them before then. And I hope you've made notes or had some thoughts about what you'd like to see. Those are kind of where I'm standing right now. Those are kind of some things that I think about. And you know, it's really, to be quite honest, it's really hard not to look at the design guidelines and not think about the whole Blue Line Rosegate process. Because that's kind of, that's the elephant in the room whenever we talk about the design guidelines is in relation to that. Now they're kind of being held, they're being held to what we currently have. But you know, I don't know what the future holds for that project, but we want to make sure that when all said and done, when somebody comes back, some door should be open.
Yes.
Yes.
Come in.
Can we open that door?
Sorry, I'm dripping with you so much. I want to come back on the phone. That's my first. Can we get to the car? Thank you. I'm sorry.
No problem.
No problem.
I think Chandler's saying that has to.
John, can we leave that door open? Yeah, just crack it. That's fine.
Okay.
So that when the next process comes, because there will be another process, there will be more development. When the city owns the 9 acres, the parks land has more area for development. I don't know what is in store for the smart property, but I want to make sure that when the next developer comes along and makes a proposal, that we have our ducks in a row and we know exactly what we mean regarding size, scale, density, all these definitions that people hang their hat on but really aren't really enumerated in the different guidelines. So those are my thoughts.
Okay. Some comments, gentlemen.
So how do you want to go about this?
Well, has everybody had the opportunity to read what's been submitted to us already? Are there any problems with that?
It's been a while since I read them, to be honest, but I didn't have an issue with what was going
on. Well, I
read it.
I'm still in section 3, and it's this list here, and I know we've talked about it, and I think we've made some changes that are wrong in my opinion, as such. We have down here, we have banks. It was suggested that we call it credit banks and credit unions. I would suggest we call it financial institutions. That's all encompassing. So that means your credit unions, your banks, whatever else.
Stockbroker?
Pardon?
Stockbroker?
Good.
Investment?
Yeah, investment, yeah.
Could also be in check cashing. Well, I guess we have an idea of our
own. Well, check cashing, we've got that one already zoned out. We did that a long time ago. It's up near the tower up there. We zoned it. Another thing here is this assisted living convalescent homes. It was suggested that we call it cognitive care. I don't think that's going to catch us. Somebody else is going to want to come in and put in a nursing home or something like that. Well, we can't do that because it's not on the list here. So we need to find perhaps a general term that would imply a nursing home, over 55, private care facility or something like that. And being my age, I can't think of that.
Senior end of life care, I don't know if there's a general encompassing term for those.
Or we could just put another notation, see city council.
Which list do you think is longer, the things we will allow or the list of things that we would disallow?
I don't think you can expressly prohibit anything. We can't even prohibit sexually oriented businesses from coming in. But now, we can regulate them down into a zone where it makes it so difficult for them to build, which is what we've done. I think there's only one spot, and it's in the middle of the Walmart parking lot where they can
build. It's in the middle of Cedar Hills Boulevard, the manhole cover.
Yeah,
there.
So there's like one spot where they could possibly be in relation to schools and churches and residential areas that it makes it really difficult. However, that's one industry that you can kind of be very segregated. You can kind of segregate against them. If you start doing that with a lot of other industries, you're really opening up yourselves up to a lawsuit. So even our check cashing, let me go back to it. I think we're on the planning commission. We had code that stated that one assisted living or nursing care facility couldn't be located within a quarter mile of another one.
Mm-hmm.
We removed that quarter mile limitation because that's senior housing is a protected class. By having this quarter mile radius, you're basically denying them their right to build in an area. So we felt that was something that was a potential liability to the city, so we removed that. So I hesitate saying this list, please don't apply.
Well, I just wondered, essentially this approved list, we have this approved list because we don't want other things to be on the approved list, where those other things are. I just was asking the context, are those other things a shorter list, would be easier to manage that list versus this longer list of all the things we wouldn't mind having in our city, but don't include the ones we don't want on the list because, just an idea. Don't know if it's the right idea, but.
If I understand correctly from when I've talked to our attorneys, these are all conditional uses, and that's the thing about it, is all these things are allowed, but we can place conditions on them. If it's not on this list, they're permitted.
You are permitted?
there, yeah, because everything on here is a conditional use. There's not a single one that's a permitted use listed here.
Right, but if you're not on the list.
Well, I think what Chandler's saying is we are very limited on what we can say.
We're very limited in what we can say is prohibited. Yeah. And that's why I really don't like the idea of saying this list of justices is strictly prohibited. That, I think that really is
these are just common everyday things.
These are common everyday things.
In our shopping center, or we'd like to see.
Can you clarify on 3.2? It talks about if it's a permitted use, if it's a fee,
the old additional use, the null edition of this back in 2006 used to actually have a couple of fees in the list.
But that's no longer
the case. Now, that change might have coincided with the change in state code to conditional use. A conditional use, I can read the state code on conditional use.
But that's not included anymore, so we don't need to worry about that.
It's not included anymore. So that wording there is probably needs to be stricken from the code. But
I think it's not on our updated version, but it's still in the one that we have published, or the one we're operating under, right?
Is it? It's still listed here, but there's no permitted uses here.
I don't know. I mean, we still have that sentence that we're all talking about, especially with the Blue Line project. The proposed use is not listed in the use table below, but it can be shown to be substantially the same as an existing item in the chart. We're going to treat it as an item in the chart. I mean, I think by narrowing or adding more things or making terms that are broader, sort of more encompassing, I don't know if it's necessary because we have language that allows flexibility, right?
My thoughts, kind of rather than to expand the list to break it down into simpler terms like retail, hard good, soft good, office,
make more general categories.
More general categories. Because I mean, when you start listing things like bakery, beauty parlor, movie theater, you're getting down into the weeds about what is.
Well, there's industry that may not have been invented yet that 10 years from now will come.
That's exactly the case with this list, though. You look at that word, if AT&T wanted to open up a store, under what category would they be?
Yeah.
So would we not let them? I mean, that's kind of the reason I think industry's changed, so.
Well, what's community service? That's pretty broad.
Community service could be like a rec center, pool, library.
But could it also be a Planned Parenthood?
Sorry, that's it again.
Planned Parenthood is a community service, right? I mean, it's pretty broad.
They can be probably a couple of things on this list, actually. But, no, I think once if you try to create an encompassing, comprehensive list, I think we're going to fail.
No, I think we need to go with more general
topics,
like financial institutes.
Yeah.
Okay, that encompasses a great many things. What do we do for the assisted living? What general topic can we make for that? That would include assisted living, the cognitive care, a hospital, or whatever it happens to be, too. I mean, something that would cover that. Maybe we call it a health facility.
We call it non-single housing. Single living housing. Non-single housing. Residential housing.
Well, but something that needs to encompass all of it, rather than just like we have right now. We have a sitting on here. It's called assisted living or convalescent home. But what encompasses assisted living and convalescent home? I guess I'm beating the bushes on that one because we've been arguing that for 2 years now. And we still got another year to argue it, I think.
No,
I'm not going to be around to argue it, but.
But like, there's good examples under, right? Professional office. That covers a lot of things.
Yeah.
But we don't need.
Restaurants is broad.
Restaurants is broad.
Special offices is broad.
You don't need interior decorating store. Right? I mean, what?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No. I see exactly what you're saying. That's why I think saying something to the effect of retail hard goods, retail soft goods, what are the terms I hear, but I haven't yet to have somebody really explain to me.
We've got pet grooming without boarding, then we got pet shop. let me just play devil's advocate, take this to the extreme. I haven't listed at all. You know, why are we even within those subzones? Why don't we just have, and I'm not advocating this, and just taking our thought process to the extreme here, for, just from perspective. You say office, mixed use office retail, then why do we have anything below it? You know, we have these headings, why do we list anything at all? And I think the purpose for that is that if we're too broad, we have to remember that we're not the only ones interpreting this list. Mm-hmm. You've got developers coming to Cedars Hills. They're looking for maximum flexibility,
right.
Maximum power of interpretation on their side of the ledger, if you will. We're trying to find something that preserves our flexibility, but also gives us enough control that we really do have a strong say in what does come into our community. So I guess my question is, where do you draw the line going too far away from a lengthy list to the point where we're giving away too much flexibility to those who are trying to come into our community, not reserving enough flexibility to the commission and eventually council. I don't wanna go so far with general headings that they're almost irrelevant because all we're doing is repeating what the subzone says.
Yeah.
You know, if the subzone is office and retail and our categories underneath these conditional uses are office and retail, then there's no purpose for this list. So I just want to caution us not to go too far with generalizing this. If this was put together for a purpose, it may need updating. And I agree, there's probably some general terms that would help us. I would just caution us against going too far.
Okay. Let me add something to that, is that of all the design guidelines, portions of the design guidelines, 3.2 is the section that's actually codified. It's in the code. So any changes we make here, they need to be made in the code as well. So with that being said, where we say there's a lot of flexibility and ambiguity, this is the portion that's codified. There probably shouldn't be a whole lot of ambiguity here.
I'm going to commit heresy here for a second. So, although I've never done that before here. But, yeah, again. So, I mean, I don't know how many acres our commercial zone is down there, I forget, but it's not the biggest commercial zone in the world. I mean, it's fairly small, right? And in that very small commercial zone, we have three sub-districts. And our forefathers on previous commissions, for whatever reason, decided that, you know, a locksmith would be better suited on this part of the small portion versus that part of the small portion, or the floral shop or church or whatever. It's almost like they've attempted to master plan the commercial zone by allowing, you know, a Jewish store over there, but church over there. So you have all these sub-districts, right, that we have this permitted use here, and it's permitted in one place or another in the commercial zone, but not in that part or that part. And as you all know, the Blue Line people have kind of struggled with that, and you know, their various iterations, they've come in trying to be flexible or inflexible with that specific project. But setting them aside for a minute, I just wonder if, given where the state of the commercial zone is today with Harps there, with a bank there, with Amsource coming in, now we even have a smaller remaining commercial zone left, if you will, I just wonder if we should consider modifying some of these sub-districts where they reside, or maybe eliminating some of the sub-districts, or not having a sub-district. It's just, you know, this is the district. I'm just throwing it out there for dialogue. It seems to me that, like I said, our forefathers on this attempted to master plan that commercial zone by, you know, saying this activity is permitted here, not over there. Just an idea. That we're talking about.
I mean, one thing to think about along those lines, it seems like what we'd ideally like to be protecting single-family residential homes. And right. I think that's the purpose for some of this.
Mm-hmm.
Along the lines of what you're saying, it almost feels like this line should go that way, whether it moves a little bit north or whatever we decide, so that all of this is a zone, and then and maybe even tighten this up.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to do what you're talking about, to where this zone is actually a little more restrictive because we've got these single family homes here, and then we loosen up in here or
right.
make it all.
You get flexibility farther from the homes and you tighten it up.
And tighten it up closer to the homes, just as a thought. Because that's, I think, part of what they were looking at. They were trying to soften things as they move closer to the homes and as they move basically closer to the homes, which I like. I think that's good. So just kind of.
Because with the Ansource going in and the sub-district that's just to the east of that, there really is not a lot of sub-district there to put much in there between that sub-district and the next one. I mean, there's only so much space there.
That's right.
So a developer might struggle with that. I mean, there's two sub-districts there with not a lot of space. I don't know what the answer is. I don't have a position as to what the district should be or it's not. I'm just saying that since we're talking about it, so, you know, the footprint's even smaller now than it was when it was made. And this was made, it was small. They put three sub-districts in a small space. Now it's even smaller.
Now this is about apply blue line, right?
No.
And they've already,
no,
essentially
no.
They've signed a contract.
Yeah, right.
They're on the current ones. Right.
And if they go in as is, then the space is even smaller, right? So now we're talking about pretty much just the land south of the Hearts, practically, for all intents and purposes. This, whatever we come
but
up here,
they're still having the same problem there where there are single family housing. I mean, the same issues that we face, that we've discussed with Blue Line, the same concerns we've had with parking, lighting, noise,
right.
That they're going to come up again. It's the same thing.
So what? Remind me what the city property is. Which sub-district is that south of us?
It's not sub-district.
It's not really in a sub-district.
This map was drawn to just
it's to the extend it's southwest kitty corner of Smarts.
As an idea.
East.
And then they line with a sub-district.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing there right now. It's all basically zone code.
And all that's left really there is is the parcel that the Blue Line wants to put in and the parcel south of Hearts, the city owns, essentially.
The parcel house, the city owns, and there's a piece that Reinhardt Oil owns. That's adjacent to, it's kind of in between the Smart property and the Hearts. You can kind of picture where that is. There's a big berm there.
They want to put in a, didn't they get approved? Well, they want to put in a car wash.
They're just talking about a car wash.
Awesome.
I seem to be thinking around the generality, which what we've done for the last year, which we've been working on there.
Yeah.
I think we need to get more specific in particular areas, and that's why I brought up the chart here.
Right.
Of course, to do something with that, then move on to something else and conclude what we want to do with that and then keep going. I mean, we can talk in generalities from now until Dawn and I leave at the 1st of January, which is all right with us, right?
Yeah.
But that won't do any good.
Right. We don't have to vote on it.
No.
Chandler, I have to back up to one thing here. We've got a bunch of conditional uses here. Where I see a dash, is that essentially saying not allowed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not. Yeah. Just a living
okay. We have no permitted. It's
yeah.
all conditional.
And so if and you kind of to make sense of that, you look at
prohibited.
Yeah, you look at something like.
Well, like the first one, antique shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at pretty much every retail in high intensity site, or go down to the movie theater at the very bottom, at the bottom, music store down there. They're allowed the neighborhood retail, office retail, which are the zones that are not adjacent. To office retail's in your residential,
mm-hmm.
I guess. But as you go to the office, which is where Lexington Heights and Charleston are,
mm-hmm.
which is right smack dab in the middle of the neighborhoods, then that's where it would not be allowed. Because that's probably not an ideal place for a neighborhood to be adjacent to, you know, high retail like that. It's probably not ideal for a developer to put a new movie theater there either. So that's where you're trying to soft like.
No, I understand that. But saying is it seems like we're very comfortable prohibiting things. We just can't. Clearly, we are.
We can prohibit them.
Regions.
In regions.
Area.
That's the thing. Is they're not expressly prohibited throughout the city, and that's the key. You can't say we don't want any movie theater ever anywhere. You know, if there has to be a place where they can build a movie theater if they really want to. And if that place has a building on it,
sorry.
If you really want your movie theater, you're gonna have to buy that building. So, you can't just express it really.
So, back to the list.
Back to the list.
All right, let's just go down. Antique
shops. I'm
just
saying, but with this list, we can put conditions on it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've noticed a whole bunch of things there, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. I actually approve of that methodology. The thing that's confusing for me on this list is it's arranged alphabetically. Now, I realize that's really great for somebody that's looking up to a bicycle shop, but it doesn't make any sense in regards to, I would sort them categorically. Because if you're selling stuff, if you're doing hard goods retail, why don't you have the 9 different hard goods retail examples there and then go down to service?
There would be a middle ground between staying specific and getting a little more general. Like you were to
can you do it without a list?
Because I looked down here and I just said, okay, I'm
lists
thinking of,
always
I shops that I visited in the last year.
I wish that there was some on the list. I wish that there could be some like retail hard goods, and you have bike shop, bookstore, and bakery, and similar uses. You know, and we can
if we do by categories, we said,
okay,
so that.
Okay, AT&T's coming in. They're clearly a hard good retail. They fit into this category.
Right.
And
so we didn't.
I don't think we need to try to think of, okay, what is every single retail item that could be sold in Cedar Hills? I think that makes.
You
really
say
well
what examples include. You say examples include.
Their guidelines are fine. I don't even know.
Now, see, I'm like, okay, this at least makes sense to me, and I can follow it.
Such as?
If I were to bring in a project.
Can we have one set of conversation at a time, please? Hey, let's have one set of conversations at a time, so we all can hear what's going on in the exam. Right? Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. No, Councilor Driggs was going with this. If we have categories, we can list some specifics and put, and like, you know, establishments. And if we're clear enough in the examples, then the like will be straightforward and understandable by anybody. You're going to have enough examples that it's clear.
What if you add to it an explicit purpose for it? So you have hard good retail, you list some examples of it with the purpose of generating sales tax revenue.
Sure.
Aren't most of these going to have that same purpose? Most.
No, they're not. Yeah. They're not. You're going to look at something like
churches. Don't.
Churches.
I said most. I'm looking at the list.
Churches. I mean, like dental offices. We don't get any sales tax from dental offices. We get property taxes.
Is that a shopping part?
Cleaning grass.
SBA.
Okay.
Cleaning establishment.
So one thing that's, and I say that because one thing that's brought up is if you look at back a few pages. One of the goals of the 2.3 plan goals number 5 is to augment the city's tax base. And people are always quick to point out it's to augment the sales tax.
That's not true.
That's not true.
I think I said that, because that's what that says.
But it calls out sales tax in a number of different places, but when you're augmenting the city's tax base, there's a number of ways you can do that. Through sales tax is one of them. Property tax is another. That is something that needs to be taken into consideration. Because something like the Blue Line project, with the property tax that they'll generate, is easily more than some of these lists on this, some of these businesses would generate from sales tax. So, fair enough. So I think, what is the purpose of the zone? Is it?
The purpose of the zone is to provide services to the citizens of Cedar Hills for
that's
the purposes
of
gathering sales tax revenue and creating a community-like atmosphere. That's the purpose of the zone.
Okay.
Well, I think we could beat this one around all night and still not come to a conclusion.
What's that?
That's what the general plan says.
Yeah.
It really does.
I would like to see everybody take this list and set it up the way they would like to see it and give it to Chandler before our next meeting so that he can have an idea of what we're talking about instead of leaving it up to him to do it. So we can come up with our own ideas at this point and move on to section four.
Section 4 actually calls out a number of specific items.
Yes. Keep that away.
Section 4 actually has a number of for as ambiguous as parts of this are, Section 4 is something like the landscaping and landscaping, especially in streetscapes, they're very specific about what happens, what it looks like, down to like what kind of trees are on streets. I mean, we're leaving things like size and scale to be talked about later and talk about nail down the kind of tree that's going to be planted. It's kind of weird to me about that.
Pretty specific in this.
There are very specific in sections of this. So,
and xeriscaping is kind of prohibited activities, not.
I would say
the way it's written, it's pretty darn close to.
It's pretty darn close, and I think that's something that the way that water usage in the city is going and in the state, it's probably something the city needs to be considered.
It's going to rain on summer, so.
It might.
This is the new Oregon.
Washington.
So maybe that's something we add in. Is that? But do you want the whole thing to be xeriscaped, or do you want? Because somebody comes in and says, oh, we should do decorative rock for 3 acres.
It's just an observation that the land, that the xeriscaping is not encouraged, and it's not exactly permitted either. It's hard to. So that's probably about changes to the section that might be one thing to consider is expanding the use of xeriscape.
Difficult because we specifically use the words park-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we talk about grassy areas. We define specific trees that are not xeriscape. Mm-hmm. Trees.
Well, xeriscape is park-like in Arizona.
I say actually, that's true. And frankly, in the Southwest, xeriscaping is becoming more an acceptable park-like setting.
Yeah, it seems a great.
So I don't know that. I think park-like is actually still very relevant.
Okay, that's good. No,
there's Midwest park-like and there's Southwest or West park-like, and there are two different things. So.
Okay.
Would you be in favor of a maximum amount of xeriscape? So, of their 30% of their development that needs to be landscaped, no more than X percent can be considered xeriscape.
It isn't. I mean. Devil's advocate here. I mean, isn't park-like? I mean, example would be Cedar Hills Parks, right? Park-like atmosphere is what Cedar Hills Parks is like.
You sort of travel benches.
I mean, I want to modify that anyway because of what's happening with food. This notion of that, again, I go back to my explanation earlier, the city fathers, if you will, who put this together. The idea was to set the building in a park-like setting. And they have inverted and put a park-like setting within the building so that it gives nothing to the community,
right,
but a double-loaded parking lot with a grass strip on the outside and the inside. And again, it won't apply to blue line, but it seems to me that no less than 30% of any individual retail office site, or all of them, whatever, under 4.1.2, both visible and accessible to the public,
mm-hmm,
is the requirement, or minimum of 2/3 of that is accessible and visible to the public.
Right.
I don't want to discourage having a park-like setting within there if it's an introverted type facility, because frankly that's attractive to the patrons. They're going to pay a little more for it. That's a benefit to everybody. But
the idea here was to create a park-like setting throughout Cedar Hills, and they're not doing that, and that's what I keep pushing back on them about, and it may be that a little clarification on that item would be warranted. I don't see them complying, in my own personal opinion, in any way, shape, or form with this 30% requirement.
They did. They did in earlier iterations.
Right. I agree with that. I agree with that.
But not the letter.
No, not his latest loop. Don't let buildings.
Okay. In 4.1.2F, specifically, landscaped areas shall help create a park-like atmosphere with linked pedestrian corridors designed to promote pedestrian activity.
Public.
The donut thing fails that measure.
Well, but here's where we're being vague. What pedestrians? The patrons or the community, and I want to make sure we're clear that this is a community.
I agree with you.
I know you do, and I'm pointing out the vagueness of some of this.
So if that's vague, we need to be a little more clear. It's a public access place.
So they do have linked pedestrian sidewalks through their project.
Yeah, right.
Exterior.
That's true.
I mean, I have a number of comments on just sticking with 4.1.
Okay.
For not a whole bunch. For instance, 4.1.1b, David, you brought this up a couple of times. Structures within the midpoint of the subdivision shall conform to the maximum light standards of the adjacent residential zone. What the heck does that mean? And have we enforced that anywhere?
So it's,
I like the idea.
Mixed-use office is, it's the one that's built out. It's the church, it's the Charleston, it's the Lexington Heights. So your height requirement there is 35 feet. However, the weird thing about it is that's not the only sub-district that's adjacent to a residential zone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes,
so,
I know.
So this comes back to where you have a pretty good idea of size or height in one district, but the second district, the office retail, gets a lot more.
Well, I think the premise there was that there was kind of happy board thinking when they wrote this, but I would imagine they realized there's a commercial zone they needed to develop, right? And they surrounded by residential. So they probably were thinking that this part of the commercial zone, it will try and taper it down, and over here, this part of the commercial zone will allow a little more. Recognizing that all of us next to the residential, but we're not going to make the entire commercial zone subject to being this adjacent.
So you fix the one subzone and single it out.
Right.
If you look at the iteration before this one, in 4.3.2, the mixed-use office retail, where it talks about a max. Maximum height of 50 feet occupied space, we talked about that a number of times. That was actually raised to 50 feet from the previous consideration from, I think it was 35 feet. So when this was last updated, that was raised.
What about 4.3?
4.3.2 structure height.
It's exactly the same as 4.2.2. They're identical.
4.4 is different.
That's correct.
Yeah. 4.4 is the mixed use.
That's different.
Again, this is always
it was the 30 feet. So, part of me thinks, okay, well, why did they raise that? And it has to be because they probably saw that land sit there for 15 years with no bites and said, okay, well, maybe we're being too restrictive here.
That is the disadvantage of what I mentioned earlier about getting more restrictive than we currently are on towards the single family residential. We are trying to attract development.
Right.
We need to protect our single family residential homeowners. But we are also trying to make sure that we develop this in there.
We are trying to build a vibrant commercial zone in our city.
No?
Does anybody know in 4.1.1F what it means?
It can still be vibrant.
Hold on, which
put a great
section 4.1.1
Cred F.
Yeah, it's.
What does that mean?
Yeah, if you go downtown and you walk up next to a brick building.
Okay.
It's really easy to do because the building's made up of lots of small. You can walk along that wall real nice and easy. If you recast that wall out of concrete, some big monolith of concrete piece, you kind of feel like you want to stay back for it. It's just, it doesn't feel. We have buildings in Cincinnati that have made a big mistake. They put walkways along big giant concrete walls, and people literally cross the street to the old buildings and walk along them. That's one way that we're talking about human scale. That's why they've adopted this colonial feel, because people like to get up close to those kinds of buildings. But we start getting more larger monolithic pieces and parts, and we start to lose that.
So human instinct, human nature.
It just, yeah, like compare the Nobel example to
this
the
office. This is about
psychology.
To me, that was a big mistake.
Neurolinguistic.
It's not colonial if you talk out, thank you. That's an architect's interpretation. Just one person.
It feels safer.
Yeah, so it's just the scale. You feel like you can interact, you know, just perceptively you can interact with that kind of wall. It's got windows in it and things, but these big, cold, giant, impassive buildings that nobody wants to walk.
Is section 4.1.4, since I haven't cited a specific section, I'm hoping to say that. So, 4.1.4, street lighting. Just curious, is this wording in here kind of up to date with today's technology of lighting and such, or is there anything, I mean, it seems like lighting technology has kind of come a little ways, maybe since this was first off. I'm just curious if saying, Chad, have you ever been aware of anything that.
Yeah, I haven't run into anything
like that.
I haven't run into anything.
Well, they have dark sky pictures.
But we want to keep that because we don't want light pollution spilling out. And
well, we use.
It just projects the light down, not up.
We use the term cutoff. And a cutoff fixture means that the lamp, which is the bulb, is all the way up in the fixture. So that if you looked at the fixture from the side, you would not see any of the bulb.
Right.
We don't mention that in here that I see. Mm-hmm. That's very different than just a night thing where the bulb or whatever doesn't shine out around the edges of the fixture. So most developments nowadays insist on cutoff fixtures. So that even as I'm looking at that parking lot, I don't actually see any of the bulbs. I see that there's light coming out of the fixture, but I don't see the bulb because it's up in the housing.
Right. We don't have that
so
in here.
That would be one.
So 4.1.4D could then be modified a little
bit?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's exactly what I'm looking at. It's dark sky lighting fixtures.
Same kind of lighting fictures.
Right.
I mean, that term's been around for a while.
That kind of lamp is in front of my house. There's a street lamp near right adjacent to my house. The car ran it over, so they had to put a new one in, and the new one in is what you're talking about. And then there's one up the street from me that's the old one.
Is that how you get replaced? I got one in front of my house.
Yeah, that's what you do.
I mean, even bollards that you put in, they can be made with cutoffs of the lamps up in there, and you see the louvers that come down.
Yeah.
So you can't actually.
I can't see the bulb of that. And it's much more friendly. It's just much softer, friendlier light.
Even Cobra head lights,
sure.
The big traffic lights,
that
are now
just
compatible with dark sky. You can't see the bulb in those either.
Well, Cobra head lights are prohibited.
I see that.
Yeah,
but you could mitigate them. So
you're not talking about a cost increase. This every maker out there makes cutoff fixtures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even our power company, who provides a lot of the Cobra lights for communities that want fruit cost, now has the cutoffs.
Yeah,
they're nice.
And when you do commercial structures, all your wall packs, all your exterior lights can be cutoffs.
Down.
So you have safety all the way around the perimeter, but the neighbors are not looking at the bulb.
I wish we had that in our guidelines, because there are two houses in my neighborhood that between them must have 70 light bulbs on the exterior, and they light them all. And I came out of a community that was upscale, and it had only downlights. And a certain number of those, you can't see the bulb in a downlight. And one night I thought, well, let me see how really dark it is out here. And I turned my headlights off. I turned them right back on because it was pitch dark. And there were over 200 homes in the area where I was driving.
So to answer your question,
we ought to be more explicit. There's some really good designs available. It's not limiting. It's not costly. It's just that we have an idea in our head, like grass is important. Light is important. A lot of communities now don't require the light pattern to interlock. And they find from a security point of view, the police are a lot more happy with that because they can see moving shadows. They couldn't when the lights overlapped. We had some police come in and talk to us about that on an intersection that we wanted to develop with no dark spots.
So the only two comments I had was just clarifying that maximum height is in the residential and the other was 30% of the requirement. And the one's getting to be visible. The comments that we were sections on the other.
Yeah, I think we ought to make a stronger statement about xeriscape, or at least some sort of conservation landscape.
Well, I think
it's absurd what we do in Utah. We're the number one per capita user of water in the United States, and that's absurd. Tucson, Arizona uses like 25% of the water that we use, maybe even less than that. And that's a beautiful community. It's hot.
But we're also the cleanest people in the state, in the United States.
We are?
Yeah, we're using the water.
No,
it's bathing.
Drive around the neighborhood and see all the.
Just stay in.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're right. I have a 25,000 gallon bathtub in my backyard, too.
I will add a section on the xeriscape that we can. Okay.
Well, I think Jenny would support that as well. I mean, you've been working the problem for a number of years. We really have made some incredible advancements. You go over to the conservation garden in wherever it is, West Jordan or stuff like that. Or the one even in Provo, which isn't a very good one. And it's marvelous what you can do. I have no grass except the weeds that come over from my neighbors. They're the grass that flows over into my yard. I have no grass on the ground. Anyway.
Jenny, what did city council discuss or talk about xeriscaping last meeting, right? What was the gist of that?
Well, we took your recommendations to update it in our code. I know that there on council, we're talking about even looking at xeriscaping our medians in the, like on Cedar Hills Drive, because there's no reason to have grass where nobody can play on it. It looks pretty, but it's pointless. And so it would be really good to have, I mean, right here it says, you know, islands shall be firm slightly and planted with Kentucky bluegrass. Well,
right.
Again, if it's not usable space, why have grass there?
Yep.
Or roundabouts.
Grass.
And in these parking lots.
Grass takes 7 feet of water for every foot of grass grown. To grow a grass a foot, it takes 7 feet of water. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you never grow it a foot. You cut it a foot now. But nonetheless, it's just like alfalfa. It takes 7 feet. Alfalfa is the most unproductive crop in the world. It
well,
also
and you guys
makes a huge this, amount of money.
You guys discussed during that xeriscaping topic that
yeah.
It can be pretty. And Highland has done it
needs to be pretty.
On their street that goes all the way down to American Fork. That whole median is all xeriscaped, and it's pretty. And Alpine's roundabout is xeriscaped. It's pretty. It can be done and look nice.
I lived in a community that said you have
to,
the only grass you could have had to be inside of a patio. But it was surrounded by a wall. Which automatically limits the space because walls are concrete.
But no, I agree. If we're going to ask residents to cut back on water use, we've got to set the example as a city and allow our commercial areas to do the same.
You have to give an example of what xeriscaping is going to look like, too.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, us from the east, zero escaping. That means lots of trees, lots of grass and shrubs. It's always green.
Right.
But you've got enough water
but
in the east that you don't have to water.
Maybe it's your southwesters.
Maybe it's worth including some photos, you know, some of these areas.
Here.
Like,
here.
Some examples.
He did that too.
What if we took the recommended plant list and included this whole cacti
brush.
No, there's like drought tolerant vegetation.
That's pretty.
Yeah.
That's pretty. Yes.
In
this whole. This whole.
I would consult.
Oh, I'm not going to make a list myself.
A landscape architect for that list. But, you know, even if that done, we've got all these things in our community that are sharing the map.
In section 4.15, parking, I love this opening sentence. I'm just really curious how it got here.
Predicts a post World War II.
Predicts a post World War II land use patterns often cite the vast uninterrupted expanses of parking areas as a tragic result of our automobile dependent society.
Yeah.
Just wondering why. This is doing it here.
We're near that development in southern Utah where we didn't use asphalt, we used gravel.
This is why we're learning about it.
And we use a darker color of gravel to delineate the slots. They didn't build it, but it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any recommendations?
I recommend we strike that sentence. Existence. It's an opinion. It doesn't really belong here.
Well, I think it's in there. And I'll play devil's advocate. You've been doing it all night. I'll play it.
I never do that.
One of the things that is emphasized a little bit, so maybe I should emphasize isn't the right word. Walkability. They want to be able to connect the various pieces of the commercial land and let people walk to and from their homes even. And I know that that's a big issue with council members of Paula, is the walkability of the commercial zone. He doesn't want to see the vast expanses of parking area, vast uninterrupted expanses of parking area.
So if you've been to walkable retail, it is really nice. It feels boring. If we can recreate it.
Yeah, this sentence has nothing to do with prohibiting that. It's just
no, it just kinda reiterates that.
Why don't you just rewrite the first sentence? It doesn't hurt to start with the second sentence.
I just feel like I really need to put that
so. Oh.
Right. Pick, jump in,
pick your,
in
you gotta so pick your battles, Chandler, you know.
Okay, Chandler, can I open another can of worms? Brand new one?
Absolutely.
Structure height.
Where you at?
Yeah, where you at?
Pick any of them, but let's start with 4.22.
Okay.
4.32 is exactly the same. 4.42 is slightly different. Okay. Having read this 30 times, maybe 40, I understand it. It totally makes sense to me. But I probably had to read it 5 or 6 times before. It's not clear and easy to understand. And the last sentence in that paragraph, sorry, the last two sentences that go together, that.
Starting with the Planning Commission?
Yep. That sentence, the one starting the Planning Commission, that's a disaster. Grammatically, it's a disaster. Just break it into 2 or 3 sentences. Let's go Hemingway on that and make them short, clear sentences and not Faulkner sentences. You know, it's too messy.
One thing we could do.
And a picture. We need a picture.
I was going to say, we can add a diagram.
A little diagram, a graphic showing where height is measured,
what
the setbacks are, please.
A diagram would be really easy.
We've got a whiteboard.
The architect's got a pen. Here we go.
This is unprecedented. The Planning Commission
You've got a board to draw on.
When you're developing commercial, you can go 25 feet just floor to floor for your first floor. Because this is sports bar, and you've got a transfer slab and all your mechanicals, so you're halfway to 50 feet already. Remember, if you do 12-foot floor-to-floor for your next two stories, which is nice commercial residential development, you're at 49 feet. And that's without developing a loft, which by code is not a story. So I can get all the way up to, you know, 60 feet or more in three stories real easy. And to me, that's where people were starting to get confused, because so we could do a real easy diagram in the code that makes it clear that what I think they were saying was three stories and no more than 50 feet for living space.
Occupied space.
Because it's been read as or in the past. So it was how many stories can I cram into 50 feet of livable space?
Well, and then
that was ever the intention of the.
I'm sorry, but people coming in saying the pitch of that roof is higher than 50 feet, therefore it's out of compliance.
Yeah.
And they just think, read it.
I think a couple diagrams would help. The other problem is using the word permitted. That word, that's a code word. That means I have a code or a statute behind what I'm stating here. And we, one of two things has to happen, in my opinion. Either that word permitted has to be changed to something like recommended or strongly recommended or whatever, or it stays permitted, but then there has to be a code, in my opinion, a code or a statute behind it, which you were saying, section 3.
Well, the word permitted is not used in this paragraph.
It's in the first sentence.
Three, okay, that's the number of stories, not height.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are two different things. You're right. I was just critiquing the same paragraph.
So,
yes.
And that, right off the bat, to me, tells me that nothing more than three stories is allowed in Cedar Hills. And I'm okay with that.
That is the way I read that.
I think that's what our community says. But we've almost approved a five-story building, you know, just months ago. Because we weren't reading this.
We recommend approval on a four-story building.
Yeah, and a four-story.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not necessarily, I have personal feelings, but I wish I would advocate. But tonight I'm not advocating one or the other. I'm just saying that this needs to reflect what our community wants.
I would add that we only almost approved a five-story when we considered these to be guidelines. And now we consider them to be code.
And where I kept getting confused was, you don't use the P word under guidelines. Mm-hmm. You don't do that.
You
guidelines
could,
or recommendations, unless it has a...
Maybe permitted.
I mean, you could say maybe permitted.
Right.
But
isn't
don't
that what
that
all those C's are on that chart? Permitted use, conditional use. It's conditional use, right? But it's permitted, right? Churches are permitted here.
I think what they meant was only 1 to 3 stories is permitted in Cedar Hills. Nothing more than 3 stories. And then if we want to make a recommendation, we would say 2 stories. That's
right.
Essentially what they're saying.
And they're very clear about...
But from a legal standpoint, I don't know that we have anything supporting that word permitted in our code.
No.
Not in this context. There's nowhere in here.
Well, except this is code.
Well,
so
it's guidelines.
No, it's, well, depending on which legal advice you want to accept. The design guidelines are cited in our code. It makes this code.
My point is, I think right now, legally, let's wipe out the current city council and the current planning commission. If you have a pro five-story planning commission and a pro five-story city council, based on what's currently written, they can approve it and get it all the way through. Because it would only be public clamor against it. But based on what's written right now, I don't know that we have a legal leg to stand on to enforce maximum 3 stories. Because we're using the word permitted without any code or statute supporting it, because it only comes under the headline of guidelines. Now, maybe we want it to remain that way, but I don't think our community wants it to remain that way. And I'm suggesting that we needs to, if this is what we believe the community wants, maximum three stories in some zones, that we should have a code or a statute stating that over and above what's written in the guidelines. I also know that there are probably people that might disagree with that because they want to maintain flexibility. But I don't know that that flexibility would ever accord with what our community really wants.
I agree with that premise. I think a lot of what's in here should become code, like code, codified code.
I mean, I want flexibility myself. I don't want our community to have flexibility, but there are some things that I think our community doesn't want flexibility.
Code's still like sort of.
And so go ahead.
So let's take wood line, because that's kind of the context that everyone uses.
Is it for the boys or one link?
It's close.
I don't know where it is.
I don't know where it is.
Flat
on your right. let's talk about blue line. Let's say that they come in with their proposal, and this is all codified, and they meet the code. There's really nothing the city can do other than rubber stamp the building.
Well, you could deny it, but you find yourself.
And so that's fine if you're okay with the provisions in your code. If you're fine with those, and you're willing to accept any proposal that meets those codes.
I'm not suggesting we codify the whole guideline.
No, but there have been.
I'm not suggesting. What I'm saying is, and I think you are too, is extracting this one guideline and making it.
Where we've done that with the list of conditional uses, it might be worth it to do in some other areas as well. Just keep in mind that it's the same thing, that as long as you're comfortable with that.
Well, and Speaker Jody Hoffman, who's the Lions attorney, has said exactly what David just said.
Yeah.
Because it's referenced in your ordinances, this is your city code.
Yeah. But we just made it very ambiguous once again. And it's this 1 to 3 stories are permitted. And you're right, the P word there, permitted, means something in a court. When they're talking about, what is allowed?
It's allowed, it just says right there.
So it's really the next sentence that kind of throws everything into a loop. Two stories is preferred.
And that's just like a,
The problem with
whatever, that's fine.
You've seen this in the public comment, that people coming and saying nothing higher than two stories. We've already said that three stories is permitted.
Pretty good, had a council member say only two stories.
Right. So that's why it's this ambiguity is a problem.
Well, there's lots of ways. There's lots of ways to interpret
is
that
there
word.
Is there a way to? Well, when it's strictly 1, 2, or 3 stories, there's a lot of ways to interpret that.
I encourage you to build two stories so I can grant you a conditional use permit.
Yeah.
you know what, we appreciate your input, we're going to go ahead with a 3-story building, what recourse does the city have to say no to that when it says 3 stories is permitted?
I agree.
That's where I think you're going with this, is that when we say 3 stories is permitted,
you could change that.
The developer can force our hand on it.
Well, I'm saying they tried to, I don't know if they tried to force our hand, but on a 4 and 5 story, they felt there was enough ambiguity because it's a set of guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
It says you can go to 50 feet, it just made a setback, and that's
I think the opinion of the planning commission has come full circle on that, or is completely different from that. I don't think anyone on the planning commission is in favor of a 5-story building anymore.
Oh, no.
They were doing that in other guys, because it's also in here that it talks about how the planning commission shouldn't be totally bound by that, because it has the flexibility to do other things. I mean, that's in there. I mean, in the opening clauses, right? It talks about,
just saying permitted in a set of guidelines can be. And I agree that it mentions it in our statutes, but been around the block enough times with guidelines and seen them interpreted so many different ways, but when it came down to something written in the code, there was no, you had a leg to stand on, you could enforce it. So
I
maybe 4.1.4 should be codified. Just pulled out of that.
I think that the area where the three stories is probably the a lot of attention amongst the community is not necessarily the height, because Walmart is that high. It's the density, right? Two-story building is going to have less density at the same height than a three-story building.
Yeah, so that's a completely different issue, the density. I mean, the problem here with Rosegate, I think you hit on it, is that you've got the size, the scale, and the density that's the issue. It's not just one of them. They're all in the circle here. So, because they're close to the maximum height. They're really close. They're really high in the density as far as the city's concerned. There is, and then as far as the scale is concerned, you saw that south facade. It's huge. So it's kind of like.
But that's what I'm saying. If you then change it to only allow two-story buildings, you're in essence also lowering the density as far as you're allowed in that area.
You are.
And you're also discouraging commercial development.
Why? What commercial?
If the developer wants to put in three stories, you're not allowed.
I don't have a lot of retail businesses.
Well, John wants to put a movie theater back in his place.
It can still be one story.
It can be one story. How much one story?
What if it's a three-story office building?
Yeah, commercial is not just retail.
Right, but what we're looking for, I think, in this area, when you're going back to what is the community looking for, I don't see a lot of three-story commercial businesses that are meeting that feel from the general plan.
If one of these zones talks about how a mixed use of residential and retail together, like for example, you have retail on the bottom floor, maybe residential up top, you could easily get to three stories. You might have retail on the bottom and two stories residential. I mean,
they do that in Riverwood.
Yeah.
That commercial on the bottom, retail on the bottom, and two stories. It's
usually in the more urban setting.
They're doing it right by where I work in Pleasant Grove, and I don't even know what the road is. You know where Noah's is? Used to be Noah's?
Yeah.
Whatever. The next major road north of that. They've got a charter school, there's a big nursery, and they've got this road, and they just put in commercial on the first floor, residential two up. This is as rural. I mean, there's farms across the street, and they're doing this.
In order to work.
I.
Somebody thinks it will.
But they've done
most
it over
of the retails
here,
have tenants right now.
Pardon?
The retails have tenants right now.
That's
they're young. They've only been open for 6 months.
That is the latest. Phrase is mixed use, you know, residential and retail.
They're close to a freeway as well.
It's
well,
come off the exit and then you have to
I don't know exactly where you're talking about.
You have to turn where the liquor store is, the state liquor store, and go down.
Talking.
So yes, it's close to the freeway, but it's not
in relation to us.
Popping around. Oh, relation to us, sure. Everything's close to
but,
the freeway.
I know, but that's that ADT, that how far what your rooftops are and how accessible your area is, that's what drives commercial. You know,
yeah.
That's why we've had Caldwell Lane, we've had
that road doesn't get
no that one that
road
right.
doesn't
that's
get
not a good road.
A tenth of the traffic that 4800 West gets.
No, once they put in Pleasant Grove Boulevard, I stopped using that road. I don't think I've probably been on that road twice in the last 10 years.
Well,
if we don't do something quickly, they're going to do it across the street in Highland. We've already seen the plan that the state's approved.
I don't think
Highland's going to
approve
either.
That was
a new
deal.
That's going
to
be a long
battle. You didn't really fight here once you get that one approved today. So.
We don't have anything to say about it.
No, well, no. We will be notified, though. Hopefully
sure, we'll
I've
notified.
Met with the state, I've met with the developmental center. And
I thought that was American Forum.
That's Highland.
But Lehigh has done it right up, back right up against a main artery road with retail on the bottom and residential on the top. It looks like a tunnel.
So,
but,
so where this is all going is the three stories is not something I think we should just count out.
No.
Particularly for our commercial out of 4800 West. Now, where they're proposing it over on my backyard, it's a little less palatable, strictly because of the traffic flow. I mean, yeah, it's less palatable for me, but whatever. I think the overall height of the building would be a more important concern. Because if you say three stories and let them get away with height anything they want, they go three commercial. How tall is that?
If it's flat roof, they can see the occupied space. It's 40 feet.
Yeah, so you're 65 feet, 70 feet to the top of the building?
Middle of the rank or to the...
I'm talking the top of the building. It could be crazy high.
Provided you're X amount of feet back from the...
Exactly, and that's what I think we need to... That would need more clarification in my mind.
But the church doesn't follow our guidelines either. Their steeple is higher than...
It's not occupied space.
It's not occupied space.
And that's how they get away with that.
It's not even space. I mean, there's no angels in this people.
There.
So, but again, we're not talking about the Woodland project. This only really applies to 9 acres owned by the city.
It's true. Well,
you still need to make the discussion with the smart land as it stands right now.
Because frankly, Blue Line could go away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Doug and I have talked a couple times, and they're really struggling right now. Smart's are struggling. With how long this is taking. So,
to right yourself.
This could.
Well, that's why they're doing their choice, though.
It could go away. And then we've suddenly got a big piece of property that we want to have maybe some clearer guidelines in place. So.
But are you comfortable using the word permitted?
I say we remove it. I say.
Full circle. Are you comfortable with the word permitted? Because any challenge. I think the land use judge, property rights someone going to look at that and say, well, we've got it right here, it says it's permitted.
I don't want to weaken it.
No, I don't.
That is not my goal.
It's like they made it, one to three stories are permitted. That's a very definitive thing to say. And then they go on to say, but here's our preference.
What we're saying is our guideline is that one to three stories are permitted. To me, that sentence doesn't make sense. That doesn't make any sense.
It's like saying. So would you rather say something like buildings may be rented to a maximum?
No, I'd rather say what it says. One to three story buildings are permitted per city code, blah blah blah.
Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
But there's no strength. But then that.
There isn't one. I agree.
So okay.
That's,
you're saying
that's the problem.
If you use the word permitted, you want it to be tethered to something that's common.
Right.
I think if we want to lay the stand on from a legal standpoint, it has to be tied to. And I'm afraid that the argument that it's referenced in our code is not strong enough. That's my concern. That if we were to get in, if we had a developer in here that wanted insisted on four stories or whatever, that he could hang his hat on this old guidelines thing and go to the Board of Adjustments. After we refuse them, after council refuses them, again, it's a four-story building.
Right. I don't believe that there's anything regarding height in the... Yeah. No, but isn't the argument that the design guidelines are referenced in the code?
That's the argument.
A portion of the market. But
the entire...
Because it's not codified, I think they're going to look at the whole thing and say, this is what the developer has to go off. So if they meet these... Right. They meet these guidelines, these requirements that you're making. What else do they have to go off?
It's a very valid point you're making that if it's in the code, it's in the guideline and in the code, and we have a legal opinion from an individual, a legal person who has a law degree, who says this is code. But you could go to court or you could go for adjustments, you could go elsewhere, and they might have a slightly different view of the legal opinion and say, oh, these are guidelines, these aren't code. And they would grant whatever.
I'm not trying to make a huge deal out of this. I'm just saying, from my background, when I read that statement, one to three stories are permitted, I then went into this book and I started looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find it anywhere.
It's not there.
And so the true sentences, our guidelines are the one to three stories are permitted. And that's a guideline. It's still a guideline.
No, but you said one of three. Our guideline is that it's permitted.
Yeah.
But are you saying our guideline is that
allowed?
Maybe our community desires one to three story buildings.
Which is weak.
But that's, I guess that comes back to the premise that these are guidelines. Unless you're going to tether it to something in your code, these are guidelines.
Right.
So it's to give somebody a box to get into, right? Because we don't.
I'm trying to protect what I think the community wants. Because I think that was the first big objection, you know, was the number of spaces. And I think they were hanging their hat on the 50-foot rule because it sounds like it's either or. You either have 1 to 3 stories or you make sure all your living
right.
space is within 50 feet.
Yep.
And it's meant to be an and. So at a minimum, we should have an and in there, somehow make sure that they understand that it's both 1 to 3 stories are permitted, and you have to keep all your living space within 52. And we can include a diagram in there.
I think a diagram is
important. Rewrite the paragraph.
Important.
And then we can continue debating whether we need a code behind the P-word or not. If this group doesn't think we need it, and council doesn't think
it's no harm, no foul, in my opinion. If it's in the guidelines and you put it in the code, it's just in both places.
I mean, again, there may be people who say that that's too inflexible, and they don't want to see that.
Jim's made a point. The guidelines are referenced in the code. I think that means something.
Yeah, they're right there. Ernie, do you want to read it?
I think it means something more than that. How's that?
If we feel that's strong enough,
I don't think it is. I have a hard time because Corey keeps saying, I'm building within the box that you've given me, right?
Yeah.
But those boxes have shady edges.
Right. For sure.
Right? And that's the problem.
And some of those edges are really important for our community.
And they really are. Exactly.
Those
you're going to need attorneys that are going to advocate the position that's very cut and dry, and you're going to get some that are
right.
You're going to get, and it comes down to what a judge is going to say.
Right. A Board of Adjustments judge is what's going to come down to if we don't have a strong enough limit.
Well, I'm saying ultimately, if all that gets denied, I mean, Blue Line can file a lawsuit,
right.
And then a district judge decides it.
And that judge will look at our code and our guidelines and decide the guidelines are good or not.
They'll find both sides
right.
of this. And they'll make very good
right.
both sides.
Mm-hmm. Not leave it up to
Well, it's academic. We can't make it retroactive for Blue Line. However,
that's
we can prevent future.
That's
right. And assuming, Blue Line, they may walk.
We should rest suggest that we take the reference out of the code to the guidelines so that we really have guidelines again.
I don't think that's the way to go. Just because we would still be treating the guidelines in the same manner. The way that we view them, the way that we use them, would not change.
Well, and the problem is when they are too broad in general guidelines, then courts can look at them as arbitrary and capricious and not hold our decision. It's better for us to have very clear-cut definitions of what is allowed and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually better to not have so much flexibility.
And in particular, on the things that are most important to our community, and when we had a public hearing, almost everyone referenced the number of stories. They and at the time, in the early meetings, because we were showing the 5-story building, they said no more than 3 stories, or 2 to 3 stories, and these were said over and over and over again. So it's obviously really important to this community, and I think it's important at this time as well. They may not have anticipated that anyone would come to our community before a 5-story building. And we've seen it, and so we have to start for this.
I know that we keep talking about Blue Line, but I think that the Blue Line issue is what's given the Planning Commission and City Council a good sense of what's important to the residents. If anything, the best thing that we can take from this whole process is, you know, the things that are concerning our life, our scale. When I hear things like, why can't we get a Home Depot there? I just kind of chuckle, but there are some really good concerns there. But at the same time, we need to, I don't know if you want to keep the box fuzzy or.
Three weeks ago, Doug walked into my office with a 4-story building. set it down on our conference table. And I told him,
that's a
non-starter.
1 to 3 over a minute.
And he said, you know, you're right. And he immediately took it back down. But 3 weeks ago, he and his architect were going back to a 4-story building to get their pro forma to work on that.
But the reason they're doing that is because it doesn't say 4-story is not permitted. It's saying 1 to 3 is, but it doesn't say.
So just change the wording. A maximum of 3 stories is permitted.
But again, you're still under the heading of guidelines.
You got your guidelines. Because
understood.
If I understand, I asked our co-listeners to talk about IR, not in the commercial zone.
The thing that we're kind of
in every other zone, it talks about it, and it talks about it, and it's really it's 35 feet from front finish average grade to the top.
The problem
top,
is
mid
in the commercial zone, it references the top design guidelines.
In residential, not in the commercial design guidelines.
In the commercial guideline, in the commercial code, it references the design guidelines.
I thought it was mid-pitch, but I only looked for it once, it was a year ago, so.
The problem we have between our general plan, the code, and the guidelines is that you can take any submission and based on your bias you may have, you can find a position to support your position. That because there's either so much vagueness or undefined or conflicting things. I mean, for example, which part of the code is, I mean, the guidelines are code, right? So we're going to go this part that says, right, this is right here. So while the intent of this plan is to provide standards for approval, it's not intended to be so rigid. Deny all flexibility and attitude. So that's in here, but we're going to ignore that part and say, oh no, it's only 3. Yet this is code 2, right? So that's part of our problem is we have language in here that's like, we want it this way, but oh, by the way, we're kind of flexible. And we're trying to have our cake and eat it too in some ways.
The funny thing is in our code it does say that if there's a conflict between the two, the more strict applies.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good phrase to have.
Yes.
I disagree that the design guidelines are code. They may be referenced, but if they were code, they'd be in this book. And they would have been accepted.
Yeah.
As code. I think we've been advised to treat them. And that's fine if that's what the city's that's what the city's attorney is advising us to do. I'm just saying
it's one legal opinion.
There's a gray area whether or not that's how they're going to be treated.
Agreed. At a minimum upfront from the industry, the way it's currently written is confused. So also agree.
That's inevitable. Lots of lawyers.
So.
But I mean, if this community has a concern about 3 stories, I mean, maybe could the planning commission make a recommendation that the city council codify that? We don't want buildings more than 3 stories.
And that's
and
kind of
maximum height, 3 stories.
I'm not saying
and maximum height.
Guidelines.
No, I think that's fine. I think that if you go through all of the zones, there's location requirements. If, you know, this is something I'm going to talk about. There's location requirements, there's setbacks, there's building envelopes, there's structure heights that are codified for each zone. And the only problem with this is you have to codify for each subzone. But that's just a simple matter. But they leave it, I mean, there's reasons why they may have left it unresolved or gray. Because maybe you get a business that comes in, it's 5 stories, and it doesn't meet the guidelines, but everybody wants it.
And that's the argument for keeping this flexibility. I mean, Craig and I have talked about this, and Craig is a little concerned with codifying any parts of this. He doesn't want a 4 or 5 story building.
Well,
he's had some concerns about codifying any of this. I don't think he would disagree with what we're talking about tonight, but to your point, that's why I keep saying there may be people who don't want to do this. But generally our community, wants no more than 3 stories or 2, frankly.
I agree with that. And if there was a time when something bigger made sense, the planning commission and the council at the time can then change that code again.
Yeah,
they could, that's right. No variation on it. That's true. They could change it back.
It's not
true. You have to have it changed before the plan comes in.
Jenny, do you have that there in front of you for the benefit of, you have that section that refers to the guidelines? What's it say?
This is under the planned commercial development project. Building structures and uses of land listed as conditional may be permitted within a planned commercial development project, subject to compliance with applicable requirements of this title and those contained within the document guidelines for the design and review of planned commercial development projects, which are design guidelines.
So it says subject to, but it's really loose. Like we've already.
I would agree that they're codified. It just said requirements for the design and review, but it says guidelines.
Do you want to call? Or do you want to rename it?
Then we don't have to do anything else.
I think we should edit that statement in the code and which put it back into guidelines again.
We don't have to sit here all night tonight. We could make suggestions via email and design that or send that around. That way we don't have to be here all night. My problem is sleeping bad.
I got all night. Let's do it.
Let's call it commercial design standards.
I already had a document called design standards.
Then we don't need this. Good. We'll amend it. We'll just attach it to the.
It talks about pipes and storm drain sumps and stuff.
Oh, cool. Well, do we have any neighborhood retail?
Do we have any? Yes. Walmart would be considered neighborhood retail?
Yeah, that's my next question. How do you define
Walmart again? Chase
neighborhood retail? I've seen it defined fairly narrowly. This development would not apply.
It's not in the neighborhood retail zone, though. So it's in the mix.
Typically, it's a corner in a residential area for laundry and.
People that pay sales tax get exceptions to the rules. That's pay sales tax, we want you in our city, and the rule.
But it says that the high
commercial
tax less
property
than
taxes
if you're in a
twice as much as residential.
They
generate
a lot of revenue
between sales tax
that's
and property tax.
That's 15 feet shorter than a residence.
Who does?
Retail.
People are going to complain. They get on the second floor and they see the roof of the neighborhood commercial next door. It's just an inversion of what they're complaining about now.
Did we finish section 4?
That paragraph.
Talk about paragraph 4
in all three.
I
would venture to say that there's a number of other issues in section 4 that need to be discussed.
Well, I think we
do that another time. Get it all tackled tonight, so.
So, what we need to do is put down our ideas, fax them to chat, email
them. I'll get them. Email.
Email.
I don't know how to work it.
Maybe we should destroy this entire document and start creating.
I will say, I know one question that council is going to ask me at our next council meeting is, when are we going to get these? Chad will probably get that question back too.
I do.
How many sections are there left?
Four is the meat and potatoes of the discussion, so you get through four.
Just tell them to get it when it's ready.
We need a better answer.
We could have worked out in
that's going to change
all your mind out to you again. Not the good thing. It wasn't the whole thing. It was just what we talked about.
It's the reality of it, though.
It is the reality of it.
I don't want somebody to type this one.
I know there are some who want to just take it from me.
What's that?
I know there are some who want to just pull it from planning commission, let council work on it.
I understand.
So we can, you can do that. Do you have Adobe, professional?
Yeah.
Jeff could highlight this and he could say, here are my issues with this. Okay. Make it out of that.
I would remind council that the role of the planning commission is, and that if we done right and done ready, it's ready.
I would agree with that, but it's been well over a year, so it's there are
yep.
The concern is that if Blue Line does walk and if we don't have these fixed, then we're back where we are right now. So.
Well, here. Sometime after the first of the year.
Tell them we held a special meeting just to get back on track.
The suggestion has been made that maybe a joint meeting would be helpful. I don't know if that is.
I'm not
going to
open that
door. But.
Well, oh,
reading my suggestions in on that list, on section three list.
Yes, the section three
four,
list, we all need to.
Or maybe it was in a month from now, we could get together in a month, talk about this and be ready then to maybe have a joint meeting with council after that and talk it through with council.
Should be early fall.
We'll have to have public hearings and.
Yeah.
We'll have to have public hearings and make sure actually have a final document.
Somewhere between the 20th of November and the end of December.
But I agree, we should get in place.
If memory serves, this whole coming and doing this activity was this planning commission's idea, or was it assigned from council? Since
it was our
idea. It was our idea to do, right? It wasn't like the city council asked us to do this.
Once both bodies had the discussion and decision with Blue Line, it became readily apparent that this needed to happen. Needed to matter.
Well, nothing prevents council from doing their own.
It has to go through the guidelines first.
Yeah. Unless the approval.
Yeah.
But you can get comments at the same
time. We know you need comments, but this body needs to have its correct error. So. One last thing, did everyone get that survey we sent out for the general plan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you all take it?
Yeah.
Okay. Those, these are all
yeah. I took it several times.
You signed my name, good.
I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
I would suggest that if this body's willing, we could have another special meeting scheduled to wrap this one, wrap it up.
The next meeting is probably will have Blue Line.
Yes.
I have a feeling. So we need a special meeting probably.
Next meeting is
23rd.
23rd. Yeah. So really the only days are the 9th and the 30th. Ninth isn't going to work for me.
We don't. Your council is signing us the right.
I'm going to Disneyland.
When?
It's the week after.
You don't know what that family festival is? I was going to cry. Seriously, I was going to cry.
Do you even know who the Grand Marshal is?
There's like, I see these signs like carnival, balloons.
Grand Marshal's in his
car.
Car show.
Grand Marshal for the parades and
stuff. But he doesn't know. He doesn't know who the Grand Marshal is.
Grand Marshal's sitting in this room.
Will the Grand Marshal please stand up? There's your Grand Marshal.
Oh, really?
Yes, I've been practicing my way.
Yeah, practice your royal speaker.
Awesome.
You get to be in the, is it the old fire pit?
So do you want to schedule a meeting for June 30th?
Make him ride a horse. That would have been.
No, that's scary. No, I ride a horse and it's scary.
Is that off? Is it June 23rd the next meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a special
meeting. Oh, special meeting.
Just to focus on this topic.
A special meeting, nothing's tying you to Tuesday night.
June 30th?
I really would like to keep the schedule clear of everything else that you're going to talk about this on our guidelines.
Right.
Yeah.
June 30th.
So June 30th.
When is Mr. Is it Levine?
He's from Germany.
Okay.
Yeah. It's what?
Is she from there too?
What's that?
Or the Levines.
What about him?
Where were they from? Oh. Germany?
Yeah.
Can we talk about him?
He's a big soccer player.
So, 30th of June?
30th of June, Special Planning Commission.
Okay.
Her daughter-in-law watches my child for me today.
She said, nine.
She's
probably here in this room. And,
it's not the record.
It's on mic.
The
meeting hasn't been, if you made a motion to adjourn, that might not have been on the record.
Anybody want to
make a motion
that we adjourn. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.